Good meeting
Come on.
everybody.
Thanks.
Recording in progress.
Carrie, can you also hit record on your Zoom so we get a backup too, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Chair, looks like the attendees are filling in. We have all devices recording. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, welcome, and good morning, everybody. This time we'll convene the Thursday portion of the hearing and ask for the roll call.
Commissioner Amenzato.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Thank you. Vice Chair Brownsey.
Present.
Thank you. Commissioner Dumlau.
Here.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Escalante. Commissioner Gold. Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Thank you. Commissioner Harmon.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Hart.
Present.
Thank you. Commissioner Ketchum.
Here.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Rice.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Turnbull Sanders.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Uranga.
Presente.
Gracias. Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Thank you. Chair Padilla.
Present.
Thank you, sir. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Before we take procedures, I'll recognize the Chief Counsel to report out from closed session yesterday afternoon.
Thank you, Chair Padilla and Commissioners. Yesterday, the Commission met in closed session and it received litigation information and advice on a matter of potential litigation and on Friends of Oceana Dunes versus California Department of Parks and Recreation et al. It also received litigation information and advice and took action on Hearst versus Coastal Commission, Linovitz et al. Versus Coastal Commission, Wall versus Coastal Commission, Ecologic versus Coastal Commission, Friends of Oceana Dunes versus Coastal Commission, and a second Friends of Oceana Dunes versus Coastal Commission. And that concludes my report.
Thank you very much. This time I'm going to recognize Commissioner Amenzato to say a few special order words regarding a statewide coastal advocate near and dear to our hearts, Ms. Jen Savage, who is going to be taking on some new important roles. So Commissioner Amenzato, take it away.
Thank you so much. Yes, today is Jen Savage's last Coastal Commission meeting as a Surfrider representative, but I know she'll be hopefully showing her face and sticking around now working with the Ocean Protection Council. I just wanted to recognize Jen's work. She has been an exceptional advocate and protector of the coast. She offers, you know, careful, thoughtful testimony almost every day of our meeting. But more than that, she's somebody who's really shown regard for all of the people and all of the roles that different folks play. She brings a real humanity and grace to our work and to these issues and to our meetings. And I'm really going to miss her. And I just want to thank her for all of her service. She's a true coastal champion, and I've learned so much from her. And I'm really going to miss her, as I know a lot of us are. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate those great words. And I think we all echo those sentiments and wish Jen the best, even though we'll be seeing as much or more of her. So rock on, Jen. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Commissioner. All right. I think that takes us to the virtual meeting procedures.
Thank you, Chair. As a result of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, the Coastal Commission meeting is occurring through the video conferencing service Zoom to host the meeting and allow for remote public participation. This virtual meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at the calspan.org web address. If you have access to the internet and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not to speak on an item, we recommend you use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so through the Zoom platform or by phone. On the commission's webpage, we have posted virtual hearing procedures, a guide for how to provide comments via Zoom or by phone. Next slide, please. If you have access to the commission's webpage, you will find the instructions here as indicated by the yellow arrow. Next slide, please. There is also a link to fill out the speaker request as shown by the red arrow. Members of the public speaking during general public comment may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during general public comment period will not be accepted after 8:30 a.m. on each day of the meeting. During general public comment, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comment are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. If you wish to speak on a specific agenda item today and have not already done so, you may do so now. We will accept a request to speak up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have access to the internet, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 415-904-5202. Again, that number is 415-904-5202. Staff will provide you with the telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. If you're using a computer or similar device, when it is your time to address the commission, the meeting organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone. If you're using a phone, the meeting organizer will give you instructions for how to unmute the phone. Mr. Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures, and I can now move on to item 3, agenda changes for today.
Please, thank you.
So everything that was listed in the staff report for item 3 is correct with one addition, and I'll just run through them very briefly. Item 7, the enforcement, there will be no enforcement report for this month. Item 9A is moved to consent. Item 10A is moved to consent. Item 12A is postponed. Item 13A is moved to consent. Item 15A, moved to consent. Item 18A, moved to consent. Item 18B is postponed. Item 18C is moved to consent. Item 20A is postponed. And item 20B is moved to consent. And that concludes agenda changes.
Thank you very much, Dr. Huckabridge. That brings us to general public comment. This is an opportunity for anyone to address the commission on an item that is not on the agenda. When I turn this over to our staff facilitator, they'll bring you into the hearing. When they do, please state your name again for the record. Your time will be limited to 2 minutes. The commission welcomes your comments and participation. At this time, I'll turn it over to the staff facilitator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a total of 14 speakers signed up for public comment. For members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and will bring you into the meeting when it is your turn. In order to allow for live video testimony, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload and this may take a moment. To speed up the process, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you will be moved back to attendee mode. There is a raise hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button to click. When it's your turn to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. First up, we will have Ashley Eagle Gibbs, followed by Morgan Patton, followed by Chelsea Sparty. Ms. Eagle Gibbs, you are now in as a panelist, so please unmute yourself and start your video if you would like, and remember to state your name for the record.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Good morning, Chair Padilla and Vice Chair Brownsey. My name is Ashley Eagle Gibbs, and I am the Conservation Director with the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin, or EAC. For the past 13 years, we at EAC have been very involved in the process of comprehensively updating Marin County's LCP. I raise this topic today because the Marin Board of Supervisors plans to conduct a hearing July 13th to consider placing into effect a combination of provisionally certified LCP amendments with the county's existing 1982 LCP policies related to hazards. We find this concerning. Combining a 82 hazards document alongside updated policies is illogical, raises inconsistencies, and ultimately defeats the intent of a full update, which is meant to address sea level rise, fire and vegetation management, and many other hazards topics, which were not even considered 40 years ago. We understand the county is proposing to have the commission's executive director check off their actions. We want to make clear that no commission action should take place without a full public hearing with maximum public participation. The Commission last considered Marin's full LCP update in November 2016. Past county resolutions and Commission actions stated that the LCP update was not to go into effect until all amendments, including hazards, were fully certified. At the November 2016 hearing, former Commissioner Kinsey expressed the county's hope to return the LCP environmental hazards sections to the Commission in the first half of the following year, 2017, now 5 years ago. It is nonsensical to put into effect a comprehensive LCP update while continuing 40-year-old hazard policies. To do so adds further delay to a long process during which the county received significant public funding, including a Commission LCP grant. Allowing Marin to move forward without updating its hazards policies is a disincentive to finishing the LCP update process. In closing, we are committed to working with the county and the commission to fully update the LCP so we can plan for the climate crisis together. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Morgan Patton. Ms. Patton, please unmute yourself and remember to state your name for the record.
Good morning, Chair Padilla and Vice Chair Brownsey. Morgan Patton, Executive Director of the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin, continuing testimony following Ashley Eagle Gibbs concerning the Marin County LCP. EAC has raised our concerns to the county about public confusion and concerns on noncompliance and inconsistent implementation by the public and the county that will come from pushing the LCP forward in this way. This would be due to confusion on what policies are applicable with outdated hazards chapters. This process is not what the commission agreed to and voted on in 2016. In 2016, Chief Counsel Chris Pedersen said at the commission hearing, just before the commission voted to exclude hazards at that time, quote, the board's resolution provided that those amendments wouldn't become effective until a complete implementation program had been certified to replace the existing one. So yes, the county could accept any suggested mods on the other elements of the LCP. Those could be effectively certified, but they wouldn't actually go into effect and serve as a standard of review until the hazard policies have also been effectively certified, end quote. The commission's action in 2019 reiterated the same point. Why not have the county come back with the environmental hazards chapter this year to complete a full update of the LCP the right way? How can the Coastal Commission allow the county to change the agreement to complete the hazards chapter now that 5 years has passed without any action by the county? Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Chelsea Sparty, followed by Whitney Grover, followed by Penny Aaliyah. Chelsea Sparty, I am having trouble locating you in the attendees list, so if you could please raise your hand by pressing the button in Zoom or by dialing *9 if you're on the phone. That will help us find you. In the meantime, we will move on to Whitney Grover. Whitney Grover, you are now in as a panelist, and you can unmute yourself and please state your name for the record.
Great, thank you. My name is Whitney Grover. I'm a board member of Golden Gate Audubon Society and chair of their San Francisco Conservation Committee. I'm speaking today to strongly support the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's mouse eradication plan on the Farallon Islands. The invasive house mouse was introduced to the Farallon Islands by humans, and we now have a responsibility to the important ecosystem of the islands to remove them. 25% of California's breeding seabirds nest on the Farallons, including the threatened ashy storm petrel. Fish and Wildlife Service's plan, published in 2019, is heavily researched and vetted by scientists and experts. In addition, similar plans have been executed and proved successful on hundreds of islands worldwide. This is not a haphazard use of poison. This is a science-based, targeted use of a rodenticide as a tool for conservation. The ecosystem of the Farallons and all the creatures on it depend on the complete removal of the invasive house mouse. There is only one proven method for island eradications, and that is the plan outlined in the 2019 publication. We hope you will consider and approve this plan and save the incredible biodiversity of the Farallon Islands. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Penny Aaliyah, it is now your turn to speak. Please unmute yourself and start your video if you would like, and remember to state your name for the record.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the PowerPoint. And good morning, commissioners. Congratulations to Commissioner Almanzada on our reappointment. And I join her in wishing Jen Savage all the best. Penny Alia, Sierra Club. Last year on July 8th, this commission approved a CDP for additional enforcement signage and new educational signage at the Santa Ana River Jetty, as well as a special condition that required the County of Orange to submit an annual report to assess the effectiveness of their enforcement measures. Next slide, please. Slide, please. Thank you. That report is due today. Based on our monthly reporting to this commission, that clearly shows that nothing has improved at this location with respect to impacts from off-leash dogs and paraglider traffic, we are unclear as to what the county could possibly provide in the way of a report for the first year. Let's review what the requirements are for the report. Item one, OC sheriffs may have visited the site, but they never leave their vehicles, nor do they engage with the public at all. Items two, three, four, given that the sheriffs do not leave their vehicles, they could not issue any warnings, nor could they issue a citation, and it would be difficult to imagine what they could possibly include in an incident report, since most visits are clocked at no more than a few minutes, and sometimes nothing more than a turnaround, according to our surf cam video captures. The 2020 staff report indicates that based on non-compliance, the ED has the ability to take appropriate enforcement action as necessary. Slide, please. The staff report also indicates that the laws, for the most part, have never been enforced. Commissioners, we have been coming before you on this issue for over 5 years. When will enforcement action be deemed necessary? If the Coastal Commission was able to protect the plovers at Oceana Dunes, why is it not possible here? Needless to say, we are anxious to see the county's first annual report that is due to staff today. Hopefully we see that very soon. Thank you as always for your time and strong work to protect our coastal resources.
Thank you. Next, we will have Adam Chubb, followed by Jennifer Savage, followed by Anna Christensen. Adam Chubb, it is now your turn to speak. Please begin your testimony and state your name for the record.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. Adam Chubb, resident at Laguna Terrace Mobile Home Park, located in Hobo Canyon in Laguna Beach. I am speaking for the Sierra Club Save Hobo Aliso Task Force. On June 23rd, 2021, at 2:40 p.m., Penny Alia, chair of the Save Hobo Aliso Task Force, contacted enforcement and permitting staff re-unpermitted grading and site development at K53 in Hobo Canyon within the Laguna Terrace Mobile Home Park. Next slide, please. At 4:30 p.m. on the 23rd, Andrew Willis, SoCal Enforcement Supervisor, advised Penny via email that he had contacted Hometown America, the mobile home park owners, and asked them to stop work. Mr. Wills added that the work would be stopped until staff sorted this out, since he was not aware of a CDP being issued for development on this lot. Next slide, please. As a new resident to this community, I was unaware that this was not the first time Hometown America had commenced development without a CDP and destroyed natural resources and protected species. I was also not aware that when Hometown America did the massive first round of clearing of this lot that included tree removal while I was out of town on April 28, 2021, that this was during nesting season. I returned home the next day to find broken birds' eggs and a completely denuded slope which had contained native habitat and the endangered species big leaf crownbird. Next slide, please. Following several conversations with the task force, we collectively asked that Hometown America not be given another get-out-of-jail-free card with the issuance of a CDP to resolve yet another Coastal Act violation in Hobo Canyon. Rather, we ask that the commission bring enforcement action against this company and not only require full restoration and additional mitigation at Hobo Aliso Ridge, but also consider denying any more development in this already built-out fragile canyon. Thank you.
Thank you. Jennifer Savage, it is now your turn to speak. Please unmute yourself and start your camera if you would like.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Padilla, Vice Chair Brownsey, Commissioners. Jennifer Savage, Surfrider Foundation, California Policy Manager. First, I want to thank Commissioner Almanzada for the extremely kind words. They are much appreciated. And yes, after more than 5 years, this is my last meeting in my Surfrider role. I began attending these meetings in December 2015, a time that made for a particularly interesting introduction to the commission. I've witnessed over the years since how the combination of long-serving commissioners striving to uphold the Coastal Act with new commissioners bringing similar passion and commitment has resulted in a current commission clearly dedicated to coastal access equity and preserving what we can of California's beaches in the face of sea level rise. And of course, we haven't always agreed, but more often than not, our principles have aligned, and the people of California have truly benefited from your stewardship of our shared beloved coast. So thank you for that. And I encourage you to keep fighting the hard fight because our coast is worth it. And to your staff, I offer a huge amount of gratitude for their dedication to this work, even when the tangible rewards of maintaining that dedication may feel minimal at best. And from your local coastal planners to your enforcement team, to your various directors and admin assistants, everyone that we have reached out to has been a consummate professional when it comes to serving the public and the public trust. So thank you, Coastal Commission staff. And although I'm moving on from Surfrider, which is a really hard thing to say, since I will be at the Ocean Protection Council, I'm confident our paths will continue to cross as we all keep striving to protect and make possible for all people to enjoy California's coast and ocean. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Anna Christensen, followed by Carol Archibald, followed by Saeed Sadegpour. Ms. Christensen, it is now your turn to speak. Please unmute yourself and start your video if you would like, and remember to state your name for the record.
Yes, I believe I'm unmuted, am I not?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good morning. Anna Christensen, Pavugna Wetlands Protectors and the Los Cerritos Wetlands Task Force were out at the Alamitos Bay Marina on July 3rd to monitor the impact of the Big Bang on the Bay event on birds nesting within a few hundred yards of the fireworks show and to rescue birds that we found to be injured. Slideshow, please. Here we are. Prioritize coastal birds and waters. Next. Not fireworks shows. Next. The Big Bang on the Bay took place near nesting sites of great blue herons and snowy egrets. Next. Public access was restricted to those paying to party and see fireworks shows set off from a barge in the bay, including boat owners only. Next. Volunteers spread padding under nests and held a blanket to catch chicks who might fall during the show. Next. While all birds who could fly, even those just learning, shot out of the nest within seconds of the first blast, no birds fell, and babies, juveniles, and adults were fine the next day. Next. However, that same morning, a boat owner found three dead birds in the marina parking lot closest to the event, partially eaten, I might add. So, okay, next. Apparently, one was identified as a rock pigeon, the others not identified. Next. We don't know why these birds died, but what we do know is that the Big Bang fireworks caused the bird colony that we were trying to protect to abandon their nests in a panic. Fireworks shows do not belong in the coastal zone. That's the end of that slideshow. And I would just like to say a bunch of dead birds also washed up on the beach, but we have found out that those are baby terns being washed off a barge. So we want to follow up with that, with coastal enforcement. We are out, people are out rescuing them. Just please, I appreciate very much the commissioners who asked to have the fireworks investigated, and we will be sending you more evidence following up. Thank you for your time. Have a great day. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Next is Carol Archibald. Ms. Archibald, I have allowed you to talk. It looks like you're on the phone. You may need to unmute.
Yes, I am.
Oh, yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Good morning, Chair Padilla and commissioners. I'm Carol Archibald from the Sierra Club Seal Society, speaking on safety at the La Jolla Sea Lion Rookery for both sea lions and visitors. Thank you for your great support in canceling the fireworks and your efforts in working with the city to get protections for the sea lions. The fireworks were to be launched 15 feet away from the rookery with 52 newborn pups and directly adjacent over the marine protected area, to say nothing about the hundreds of birds. Despite no fireworks, the crowd was unwieldy at both the seal and sea lion rookeries with over 3,000 visitors each day. A few of the scenarios that occurred over July 4th weekend were spear fishermen jabbing sea lions with their spears to get them out of their way. A large party at night at Boomer's Beach next to sea lion moms and pups, with pups missing the next day and litter strewn all over. And people with small children climbing over the short wall to pet sea lions with large bulls nearby. All of these violations and many more are extremely illegal based on the Marine Protected Act, as well as our state and city ordinances, and really unsafe for both people and marine mammals. The sea lion rookery, the only mainland rookery, is an environmentally sensitive habitat area and needs to be completely closed off during pupping season from May 1st until October 31st. And the metal railing by the stairs needs to be extended so people cannot easily climb over the short wall. We are most grateful for your help and look forward to your continuing work with the city to temporarily limit public access to this special place. During the 2021 pupping season, and to during this 2021 pupping season, and to lay the ground for permanent closure in 2022. I thank you.
Thank you. Next is Saeed Sadegpour, followed by Sue Kaplan, followed by Jeff Edwards. Mr. Sadegpour, it is now your turn to speak. Please remember to state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Yes, we are Saeed Sadegpour and Ann Sadegpour, and Ann is speaking. Good morning, everyone. This is regarding item W12A, Cuthbert Road in Malibu, from yesterday's agenda. We're sorry we were unable to speak at yesterday's meeting due to a technical error, and we would like it to go on record that our intention was to speak and that we had hoped that the respected commission had considered postponing its decision regarding our appeal until the court makes its decision in this private current litigation regarding our legally recorded view protection. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Sue Kaplan. You may begin your comment. Please remember to state your name for the record. Sue Kaplan, it looks like you are in as a panelist. Please unmute yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Sue Kaplan, a Venice Coastal resident. And good morning, commissioners. I want to thank you for these opportunities to speak on coastal concerns. And I'm here to tell you that Venice still needs your help. We have come before you so many times seeking redress from a failure of the City of Los Angeles to make proper determinations for CDPs based on the correct regulations, the Coastal Act and the Venice Coastal Land Use Plan. In the past, we have been able to rely on the city's appeal board, the West LA Area Planning Commission, to write the errors of city planning. In the past, they showed a knowledge of the coastal regulations, including the Mellow Act, and a willingness to apply them as the standard of review, but no more. The current Area Planning Commission has shown little interest in familiarizing themselves with the coastal laws, and so their deliberations and decisions are based on erroneous findings. One commissioner, a land use lawyer, in his deliberations, offers erroneous legal interpretations, influencing the outcome and comments by the other commissioners. He claims that the standard of review for a CDP is a Venice Coastal Zone specific plan, which was specifically not certified by you. The city attorney does not correct them. Character is also misapplied. Some members base their vote on because they think they have that the project is pretty and not whether it's compatible with the character of the neighborhood as required by the Coastal Act and the LUP. No matter how hard we try to make them aware of these errors, they just seem to ignore it. This is why we so often come before you. We are dangerously prejudicing the writing of the local coastal program. So we need your help. Would you consider reaching out to these city commissioners and offer to give them a the Torah on the coastal regs. A knowledge of coastal law should never happen at the West LA Planning Commission. Let's correct this once for all. The result would be that we would come before you much less often, and that would be a good thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Jeff Edwards, followed by Alice McNally, followed by Roger Johnson. Jeff Edwards, I am not able to find you in the attendee list. If you could please raise your hand by pressing the button in Zoom or dialing *9 on the phone. In the meantime, we will move on to Alice McNally. Ms. McNally, please unmute yourself, start your video if you would like, and state your name for the record.
Good morning, Alice McNally. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I am speaking to you today about the risk posed to our coast by the nuclear waste stranded indefinitely at San Onofre. I am a homeowner and a rental property owner on the coast you are charged to protect. This is my home and only source of income. I am sure many of you are in the same position. Is it time to sell and move hundreds of miles away and fight from a distance, as one of our top nuclear safety analysts has done? Why must the public be responsible to show proof that the risks to our coast from San Onofre are real? The burden of proof should be on Southern California Edison, and they have offered none. Ask yourselves, will history remember the Coastal Commission as part of the problem or part of the solution? Have the permits you have passed, which include waivers and exemptions, done more to maximize coastal protection or minimize it? 1,800 tons of nuclear waste are stranded here indefinitely. Are we now leaving it to chance? Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Roger Johnson. Mr. Johnson, please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and you may begin. Roger Johnson, it looks like you are in as a panelist. Please unmute yourself and begin your public comment.
There, am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Thank you. Roger Johnson, San Clemente. Thousands of radioactive plutonium and uranium are now stored near the beaches at San Onofre and Diablo Canyon. This dangerous waste is scheduled to remain on the beaches indefinitely, perhaps the rest of the century. It's housed in temporaries of questionable integrity. These temporary facilities have no defense against terrorist attacks, flooding, storm surges, sea level rise, earthquakes, and canister failure. The Coastal Commission is failing to protect the public and failing to protect the marine and coastal environment. This is by far the most dangerous threat to the California coastline and the tens of millions who live here. The Coastal Commission is doing little to address this major threat to Southern California. It is not protecting the public or the coastal environment. It is the interest of the nuclear power industry. This is a shameful disgrace in the Coastal Commission, which fails to take action or even discuss the issue for the California coast. Please put this on your agenda as agenda item number one for every future meeting until 1,000 tons of radioactive plutonium and uranium are removed. Why does the commission fail to address this issue? Exactly what do you plan to do to address this problem? It reflects poorly on the Coastal Commission. We have the radiation equivalent of 20,000 Hiroshima on our beaches, and nothing is being done. Please get serious about the number one threat to the California coast. Thank you.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of our list, so I will try one more time to find Chelsea Sparty and Jeff Edwards. I'm going to lower all hands. Please only raise your hand if you are either Chelsea Sparty or Jeff Edwards. Okay, I see a Julie Tacker raising your hand. I'm going to promote you to panelist, and we will see if you are one of the folks we are looking for.
Okay, it looks like we now have someone with the name Julie Tacker. Could you please unmute yourself and tell us if you are either Chelsea Sparty or Jeff Edwards?
Yes, good morning. This is Jeff Edwards.
Okay, great. Please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Commission. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I'm a 45-year San Luis Obispo County resident and wish to address your commission regarding the ODSVRA. While you may have thought your March 18th decision to phase out and close the park to motor vehicles put the issue in your rearview mirror, I'm afraid that's not the case. Your closed session agenda contained multiple legal actions in connection with the March 18th decision. The problem is, while the courts may narrow the issue, they are not likely to resolve the larger matter of park closure. I predict one or more of the court decisions will remand the matter back to your commission for further action. You'll be tasked with doing what you failed to do on March 18th. That is, do the hard work and craft a compromise that balances the protection of coastal resources and optimizes public access, yes, with vehicles. Instead, in March, you overly relied on staff, and without constructive debate, you took what appeared to be the easy way out. So where are you at today? The status quo. Nothing has changed. The ODSVRA is operating per usual. The impacts continue, especially to the community of Oceano. And the public works plan all but forgotten. A solution to the problem exists, a compromise that includes a southern access at the soon to close Santa Maria refinery owned by Phillips 66. Such an access and staging area was contemplated by the original 1982 CDP. Balancing the competing interests is difficult, but it's an obligation your commission must fulfill for all of California. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, that brings us to the end of general public comment.
Thank you very much. Well done. And thanks to everyone who addressed the commission. That will bring us to agenda item number 6. The items moved to consent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are 11 items from Energy Ocean Resources, the Federal Consistency, North Coast and North Central to report today. Item 9A, a certification review for an LCP amendment by the City of Eureka to change the Coastal Commercial Services Zoning District height limit. Item 10A, a CDP application by the City of Arcata to construct a launch facility for non-motorized personal watercraft. Item 13A, a consistency certification by the U.S. Air Force for an extended range cannon artillery testing program at Vandenberg Space Force Base. Item 15A, an LCP amendment by San Mateo County to modify the accessory dwelling unit provisions of the LCP's land use and implementation plans. Item 18A, an LCP amendment by San Luis Obispo County to amend the LCP's implementation plan to address deviations from LCP requirements related to the state density bonus law. Item 18C, a certification review of San Luis Obispo County's LCP amendment amending the sign ordinance. And item 20B, a CDP application by the City of Capitola to make improvements to Capitola Wharf, including authorizing work done under 3 emergency permits and future maintenance activities. I would note that we received comments on the San Mateo County LCP amendment related to ADUs from the same commenter who spoke on the City of Pacifica ADU ordinance that was approved on the consent calendar last month, and raising similar types of concerns about parking, transit, and encouraging affordable housing, all of which are addressed in the staff report. And here, as with Pacifica, we worked with county staff to ensure that ADU-related private parking be accommodated on-site only in focused areas of the county's coastal zone near important public visitor access areas, all just north of Half Moon Bay. One parking space per ADU would need to be accommodated in those areas, and we don't anticipate that this will significantly impact potential ADU development in the county's coastal zone. At the same time, it would protect important parking for coastal visitors, consistent with the tailored approach that the commission has taken in half a dozen previous cases in Central California. The county is in agreement with the recommendation, and we continue to recommend that the commission approve this LCP amendment on the consent calendar. For all items, the applicants are in agreement with the staff recommendation, and with the one exception I've just described, we are not aware of any opposition related to these items and are thus recommending that these consent items be adopted per the staff recommendation. And I believe we do have one individual signed up to speak on one of the consent items.
All right, thank you very much. Just confirming we have one speaker and which
yes. item is that? For item 15A.
Okay, and before we take that, are there any ex parte with respect to any of the items being moved to consent? I'm seeing none. Okay, let's bring in the speaker on item 15A. State their name for the record. Their time will be limited to 3 minutes.
Okay, Christopher Peterson, I have promoted you to panelist. I believe you are unmuted.
Good morning, Chair Padilla and commissioners. My name is Christopher Peterson. It's a pleasure to talk with you today. I am here to speak about the San Mateo County LCP amendment regarding ADUs. I urge the commission to delete the suggested modifications that would require off-street parking for ADUs in neighborhoods near the shoreline. I'll start with a personal anecdote. When I moved to California to go to law school, I rented a cheap ADU with no off-street parking. It wasn't a problem because I didn't own a car. I couldn't afford a car. Even if I had a car, I wouldn't have been able to afford an apartment with off-street parking. So I walked a lot throughout law school. As I kept my student debt low, so for better or worse, I was able to accept jobs after law school that didn't pay big law firm salaries. To require off-street parking here will have the practical effect of prohibiting ADUs and an inherently lower cost form of housing from areas within easy walking distance of the coast. This is tantamount to saying that low-income households aren't allowed too near the beach. That's incompatible with the Coastal Act's directive to the commission to encourage affordable housing. It also ignores the providing lower cost housing close to the shoreline is itself a way of expanding public access for all income levels. The recommendation's emphasis on off-street parking also reflects a failed approach to expand public access by focusing on automobile access. That approach has worsened traffic, failed to avoid competition for parking, and driven up the cost of housing. It is also incompatible with the Coastal Act's emphasis on expanding and improving public transit as the preferred way to provide access to the coast. Requiring more and more off-street parking undercuts transit service and worsens the state's environmentally devastating over-reliance on the automobile. I urge the commission to rethink its approach to transportation and public access in ways that align with the Coastal Act and that help the state achieve its climate goals. The modest first step of that process should be deleting the suggested modifications requiring off-street parking for ADUs close to the shoreline. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Good to see you. Staff, do you have a comment for the record?
Sure, I'll take that, Chair Padilla. We appreciate Mr. Peterson's comments. We do believe that they're accounted for, they're replied to within the staff report. I would note, Mr. Peterson indicated that the modifications would lead to a prohibition on ADUs in that area. That's incorrect. All of the LCP is being modified to help relax standards for ADUs throughout the coastal zone where they're allowed. We did look with San Mateo County, and just as we've done in other cases, to try and find that narrow area where on-street parking is really important for coastal visitors and where transit isn't really an option for many of those visitors. If they're families coming from far away, they might have a cooler, they might have beach gear, they might have a dog. It's really difficult for them. And so we're trying to protect that resource, but we've been very careful about it. There's about 1,100 acres the county estimates is where ADUs would be allowed in the county's coastal zone. Within that, about 70% of that acreage would not be subject to this additional requirement because in looking at it, those were areas where we thought that the on-street parking issue wasn't going to impact coastal visitors. So the area within which there would be this additional parking requirement, which is one ADU parking space, is about 30% of the area where ADUs would be allowed within the coastal zone. We think that's appropriate. We think it on the ground protects what is an important coastal resource for visitors who aren't fortunate enough to live in those areas. And we also think it's going to encourage ADUs there too, including with respect to the relaxing of ADU standards that go up throughout the entire area, not just the 70% or the 30%. So I'll leave you with that when we're available for more questions.
Questions on that? I mean, so staff's response is that here in this particular case, there is still access value to requiring the provision here in this particular case. I think in a very broad general sense, Mr. Peterson generally has a pretty good critique in that we have to get away from equating vehicle access, vehicles parking with access in every case. I think we need to get a little bit more in the 21st century around that. I've said that for a long time. But here, I think there's a pretty persuasive argument. Are there any objections to this item remaining on consent? All right, I'll bring it to the commission for a motion. Commissioner Wilson?
Yeah, I'll move to approve consent.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
I'm sorry, who was the second?
Second.
Commissioner Munga, any further deliberation or discussion?
I just want to acknowledge that if this item was, I just don't think that in regards to the ADU issue, again, this month I will not be, putting out my protest vote with relationship to that issue and disagreement, just because I just don't think it's going to be functional. But I just want to acknowledge that I really side with the commenter's opinion on this. But also, I have two items, one from the city that I'm standing in and one from the city that I live in. Both are really great items. One is the city of Eureka's height limit increase. And I want to say, that's going to help with housing density in the future in a place where it needs to be. And with the dock project that actually I helped initiate in 2008. So it's finally actually happening. So I'm so happy to be here today to help approve that. So with that, I'm happy to support this.
Thank you, Commissioner Wilson. All right, moved and seconded, asking for an aye vote to approve the consent calendar. Please call the roll.
Commissioner Amanzada?
Yes.
Amanzada, yes. Commissioner Boschko had to step out of the meeting. So we go to Vice Chair Brownsey.
Aye.
Vice Chair Brownsey, yes. Commissioner Escalante also had to step out of the meeting. We go to Commissioner Groom. Commissioner Groom?
Yes.
Thank you. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Turnbull-Sanders?
Yes.
Turnbull-Sanders, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yep.
Wilson, yes. Chair Padilla?
Aye.
Chair Padilla, yes. The vote's unanimous.
Thank you. With that, the items on consent are adopted. I think that brings us to item 8, the North Coast District DDR. Is there a DDR?
Yes, there is. There is, and for item 8, Deputy Director report for the North Coast District, there is one waiver and one immaterial amendment for your consideration today. I would note that there is a typographic error on the numbering of the special conditions on Appendix A of the Caltrans immaterial amendment. However, the numbering is correct on Attachment A of the amendment, and the error does not affect the substance of the amendment in any way. If approved, we will be sure to correct the error before sending out the notice of effectiveness. Staff has not received any comments on these items, and we are not aware of any opposition. We are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any of the items in the deputy director's report.
All right. Are there any speakers or ex partes on the report?
There are no speakers.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing none, those items are reported out. I think that brings us to Energy and Ocean Resources.
Correct. Item 11A, the Deputy Director report for Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency. There is one waiver for your consideration today. Staff has not received any comments on these items, and we are not aware of any opposition. We are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any of the items on the Deputy Director's report.
Thank you. Are there any speakers on this report?
No.
Thank you. Any ex parte? Any objections? Seeing none, those items are reported out.
Thank you.
That brings us to North Central Coast.
Yes, that does. That does bring us down to the Deputy Director's report in North Central Coast. We don't have anything to report under item 14. So that'll actually take us down to item 16A, This is a combined presentation on items 16A and 19A. And Daniel Nathan, who's an analyst in our statewide planning unit, is going to give the main presentation accompanied by Dr. Lauren Garsky-Garcia from our ecologist team. So we do have a PowerPoint if we could cue that up. And Mr. Nathan, it's all yours.
Thank you. Item 16A and 19A are the combined presentation for two separate Forest Health and Fire Resilience Public Works Plans, or PWPs, prepared by the San Mateo County Resource Conservation District and the Santa Cruz County Resource Conservation District. Item 16A also includes the first proposed vegetation treatment project, Camp Butino, which is directly embedded within the San Mateo County PWP. Next slide, please. For the last century, fire suppression, increased fire frequency in some areas, and more recently, climate change have resulted in unhealthy forests that set the stage for larger and more intense wildfires than would naturally occur in the absence of human intervention. In the Santa Cruz County and San Mateo County coastal zones, many forested areas have dense overgrowth, including too many young trees and an unnaturally thick and impenetrable understory. These crowded forests, particularly when stressed by drought conditions, provide a ladder for flames to reach high into treetops and produce intense wildfires that harm ecosystems and are a challenge to manage. To address this threat, Commission staff have collaborated with both county RCDs over the past year and a half to develop a program that increases fire resilience while protecting and restoring habitats within the two counties' coastal zones. This collaboration has also included representatives from CAL FIRE and state parks, and staff has worked hard to ensure that projects can be developed to fully protect coastal resources consistent with LCPs while avoiding unnecessary delays. Next slide, please. The majority of the projects proposed through the PWPs are forest health projects, which restore forest communities to conditions mimicking the respective fire frequencies they would naturally be exposed to. That is, to remove dead, dying, and diseased trees and brush, invasive species, thin out young saplings to allow mature trees to attain full growth, and clear unnaturally thick understory while ensuring sensitive habitats are preserved. The PWPs also allow for fire prevention projects, which will affect a minority of the total acreage and protect existing structures or infrastructure by creating defensible spaces to address public safety concerns. Fire prevention projects are integral to a range of strategies that mitigate fire hazards on a regional and community scale to reduce the risk of uncontrolled fires that can adversely affect ecosystems in addition to life and property. As with the forest health projects, fire prevention projects must adhere to numerous PWP standards to ensure that impacts to coastal resources are avoided, minimized, and mitigated, consistent with the certified local coastal program. Importantly, these projects too are required by the PWPs to provide for ecological enhancement if feasible. The PWP process is an effective mechanism for permitting this program because the Commission retains review authority and provides public hearings for each individual project proposed as part of the PWP, while at the same time providing a streamlined alternative to project-by-project CDP review. In this case, two PWPs were developed to allow the respective county RCDs and project partners to design and implement critical fire resilience projects over a 10-year period. Next slide, please. The purpose of both PWPs is to accommodate thoughtfully designed forest health and fire prevention projects in areas of moderate to extremely high fire risk in each county. The PWPs provide the framework for which future vegetation treatment projects can be analyzed and implemented under one coordinated plan. The PWPs rely on the standards and mitigation measures adopted as part of the Board of Forestry's California Vegetation Treatment Program, or CalVTP, along with more stringent standards developed for the coastal zone. These coastal-specific standards, referred to as the Coastal Vegetation Treatment Standards, or Coastal VTS, provide an additional layer of protection over and above the standards applicable outside of the coastal zone. In addition to the CalVTP and Coastal VTS requirements, the PWPs require early coordination among agencies and a public process for each individual future project. These three core PWP functions work together to maximize coastal resource protection. Next slide, please. The PWPs allow for five potential methods for future vegetation treatment, including prescribed burning, mechanical treatment, manual treatment, prescribed herbivory, and herbicide application. All Cal-VTP standard project requirements, or SPRs, and mitigation measures must be implemented when designing a project. These measures serve as development standards or best management practices that project proponents must comply with when designing and implementing vegetation treatment activities. For example, numerous SPRs protect against biological resource impacts through standards requiring surveys to determine the potential for sensitive species and habitat within treatment areas. Resource protection, training for crews carrying out treatment activities, and other measures designed to address specific habitat concerns. A summary of the SPRs and mitigation measures can be found in Exhibit 1 of each staff report. Next slide, please. Both PWPs also require project proponents to comply with the coastal VTS developed through coordination between Commission and RCD staffs. An important concept of the coastal VTS is that all projects must implement a vegetation removal hierarchy, wherein dead, dying, and diseased vegetation is thinned or removed first, followed by removal of invasive species, and then native species that are not endangered, threatened, rare, or have been otherwise determined to be especially valuable, with the end goal of having appropriate species composition in the plant community with characteristic structures, including vegetation age, height, and density. There are some exceptions for fire prevention projects to allow for additional vegetation removal if maintaining such vegetation would result in unacceptable fire risk to existing structures and infrastructure, provided, however, it is the minimum necessary to protect the existing development. Other provisions in the coastal VTS provide sideboards on the use of heavy equipment, place limits on the use of herbicides, and outline ecosystem objectives and protection measures. The coastal VTS can be found in Exhibit 1 of each staff report. Next slide, please. Under the Commission's regulations, the Commission may concurrently consider a PWP with a specific project associated with it. In this case, the San Mateo County PWP includes a 44-acre vegetation management project proposed within the Girl Scouts of Northern California, Camp Butte and Oak Creek property, which is a private recreational site located in the unincorporated Pescadero area of the southern portion of the county. Our ecologists agree with the RCD that the property exhibits unhealthy forest characteristics, including densely overstocked tan oak and redwood trees that results in weaker forest stand conditions where vegetative organisms compete for resources and are more susceptible to disease, such as sudden oak death. Mechanical and manual treatment activities are proposed to remove dead, dying, and diseased material, invasive exotic trees and vegetation, and some smaller live trees and understory vegetation. The project has been designed consistent with the county's LCP by protecting ESHA and other sensitive biological resources through the identification of sensitive species and the proposed implementation of protection measures to avoid direct and indirect adverse impacts, including but not limited to the establishment of buffers to avoid sensitive resources, limiting vegetation removal to ensure there will not be a conversion of habitat, and scheduling treatment to avoid active bird nesting seasons. Additional measures will protect soil stability and water quality, as well as visual and cultural resources, while public access will not be impacted. The Camp Butte and Oak Creek project is thus consistent with the county LCP. Next slide, please. For future projects undertaken pursuant to the two PWPs, project proponents must prepare and submit a Notice of Impending Development, or NOID, to the Commission for review and approval. NOIDs will not be approved unless the projects are of a type, location, and size as identified under the PWP project standards, including compliance with the SPRs, mitigation measures, and coastal VTS. Consistency determinations are made by the Coastal Commission and are subject to public review and comment and a public hearing, wherein the Commission may condition individual projects to ensure consistency with the PWPs. Further, the PWPs require that projects adhere to reporting and monitoring requirements, including noticing prior to and during development activities. In addition, the PWPs require that both RCDs prepare 5-year programmatic reviews on the status of individual vegetation treatment projects and overall program success. As part of this process, the Commission retains enforcement authority for projects that are undertaken inconsistent with the provisions of the PWP or NOID authorizations. I will now turn the presentation over to Dr. Lauren Garsky-Garcia of our ecology group, who will provide some additional detail on the ecological context and considerations that went into developing the coastal VTS for these counties.
Thank you, Daniel, and good morning. Next slide, please. In fall 2019, we began discussing fire resilience issues facing the region while in the field, where we observed examples of forests with overgrown understories, forests encroaching on native grasslands, and invasions by non-native species such as French broom, which are here on the lower right. These represent unhealthy ecosystems that have been impacted by the loss of historical fire regimes and would otherwise exhibit native vegetation patterns representative of fire-adapted habitats. Other concerns and threats to forest health include pest and pathogen infestations and transmission, the realities of climate change, such as increased drought, increased temperatures, and attenuated maritime influence of fog, and senescent communities lacking the space and resources to support younger age classes as may be appropriate. It is important to note that these concerns are not universally applicable to the coastal zone, but are rather vegetation community and site specific, which is why it is essential that we provide a framework that allows for the rationale, targets, and treatments proposed for each situation to be evaluated case by case. The coastal VTS establishes an overlay of added precautions for work within the coastal zone beyond the Cal VTP and provides for our continued and more detailed review via the project-specific analyses that must be subsequently submitted. Next slide, please. In developing the coastal VTS, technical and planning staff work closely with the RCDs and other local parties, including representatives from the counties, state parks, CAL FIRE, and professional foresters. Robust and ongoing discussions led to a shared understanding of the natural resource concerns for the coastal zone, as well as the forest health and fire prevention approaches that could be employed. A number of example cases, including the Camp Butte project that has been submitted with the San Mateo County PWP, were used to explore representative scenarios. The resulting standards incorporated to the PWP reflect this work as an overlay to the Cal VTP, which staff believes will facilitate the restoration of ecosystem health where it has been compromised by a variety of threats. While we understand that not all technical experts may agree on the particulars of fire resilience, including how to determine an appropriate fire return interval or whether vegetation management can be beneficial to certain habitat types, the coastal VTS explicitly recognizes the importance of ESHA protections and allows for us to work towards ensuring those. It also requires the avoidance of unintended habitat conversion as defined by the characterization of Vegetation Community Alliance membership, which is a more conservative approach than used for the Cal VTP. And this limits also, there also are limits on methods and tools that are employed to ensure that we're using the least damaging alternative available. In addition, staff recognizes that proactive measures to benefit sensitive ecosystems in the present would also prove beneficial relative to reactive measures that may have to be taken in the course of emergency fire response when regard for ESHA is necessarily secondary to safety. For example, strategic removal of invasive vegetation or stands carrying an abnormal load of dead material can reduce ladder fuels and fire risk while simultaneously opening up space for native obligate cedars that have been otherwise thwarted. The expectation is not to altogether eliminate fire risk, but rather restore ecological conditions so that when fires do burn through, they will burn with intensities that reflect more natural fire regimes and to which the ecosystems are adapted, rather than severely damaging the soils, seed banks, and below ground vegetative reserves, or consuming old growth trees that would be resilient to less intense and more natural levels of disturbance. With that, I'll turn this back to Daniel. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. Next slide, please. Commission staff have also published an addendum to the staff reports in response to public comments received. In brief, opposition to the PWPs are generally centered on the Cal VTP protection measures not providing for appropriate fire management regimes in certain coastal habitat types, which would lead to conversion of or damage to native habitat. However, staff notes that these assertions are based on a misunderstanding of the PWP process and mischaracterization of the PWPs as vegetation clearance programs. while the PWPs utilize the framework of the CalVTP in order to dovetail with the efforts of other state resource agencies, they include additional and important protections related to both public process and coastal resource protection. These include public process measures such as early coordination between project proponents and commission staff to identify any coastal resource issues, as well as commission review and public hearings for individual projects prior to authorization. The PWPs also include additional protection measures to the CalVTP SPRs and mitigation measures in the form of the Coastal VTS, which ensures that projects are designed in conformance with the Coastal Resource Protection Standards of the Coastal Act and applicable LCP. Thus, the PWPs will ensure that coastal resources are protected and ecosystems are restored while communities are addressing wildfire hazards. Next slide, please. In closing, staff believes that both PWPs will provide an important tool for helping reduce fire danger while also protecting and enhancing ecosystem health consistent with both county LCPs. Further, both Santa Cruz County and San Mateo County have indicated that the PWPs sufficiently protect coastal resources consistent with their respective LCPs, and both counties recommend approval. Thus, staff recommends that the Commission approve both PWPs as submitted. Approval as submitted would ensure that projects, including the Camp Butte Nope project, can proceed without delays. The motions and resolutions for item 16A, the San Mateo County PWP, including the Camp Butte Nope project, can be found on page 9 of the San Mateo County PWP staff report. The motion and resolution for item 19A, the Santa Cruz County PWP, can be found on page 9 of the Santa Cruz County PWP staff report. This concludes Commission staff's presentation.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Well done as always. How many total speakers do we have on this combined item, staff?
We have 3 of the applicants' representatives, 2 public agency representatives, and 15 members of the public.
So, all right. Thank you. Are there ex parte with respect to this item? Commissioner Wilson?
Thank you, Chair Padilla. I do have ex parte. I received a phone call yesterday from Yana Valakovich, who is our local forest advisor for University of California Cooperative Extension from Humboldt and Del Mar County, is also a director with the county in those things. She called to highlight that there was a letter from the Board of Forestry, which I had seen, and expresses concerns about potential duplicative regulatory requirements on fuel management activities, advocated for a review of Coastal Commission policy in the future on this, and followed up with an email, which I have forwarded to staff. With that, that's my ex parte. Oh, excuse me, it was yesterday at 3:30 p.m.
Thank you, Commissioner Wilson. Commissioner Rice.
Yes, thank you, good morning. I have an ex parte report, an email exchange with Mark Brown of the Marin Wildfire JPA on this Tuesday, July 6th afternoon. Regarding the specifically the San Mateo PWP, that was the one he was looking at, and expressing concerns over one duplication and or confusion around standards between the CalVTP and the coastal the PWP and what would be required within the coastal zone. Questions with regards to process and timeline, and just general concerns over implementations and whether potentially a PWP process might create a disincentive to pursue projects in the coastal zone. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there other ex partes? All right, starting with San Mateo County, who do we have on behalf of San Mateo County?
I am not sure who is representing San Mateo County. We have Jim Robbins, Lisa Lurie, and Steve Otten signed up to speak. I've promoted Jim Robbins and Steve Otten to panelists, and I am unable to find Lisa Lurie
from the district.
But Mr. Robbins and Mr. Otten should be able to speak right now.
All right, let's bring him in.
This is Jim Robbins. I'm not sure if y'all can hear me yet.
We can hear you. Are you part of a combined presentation?
Yeah, Lisa Lurie, who I believe is on, will be the lead on the presentation. There's a PowerPoint. Thankfully, much of the information has already been provided by Daniel and Lauren, who gave great overviews of the PWPs, but I'm hoping you can find both Lisa Lurie and let her in. I think Steve Auten is not going to be speaking. It will be myself and Lisa, and there, again, there is a PowerPoint that should be available for us to walk through with y'all.
All right, Mr. Robbins, how much time will you need for your combined presentation?
We were told 10 minutes, so we believe we can get it done in 10 minutes or less.
All right, we'll give you a block of 10 minutes. Let us know when you're ready, and we'll see if we can get your PowerPoint up.
And have you found Lisa yet?
I don't see the name Lisa Lurie. There was a Tangy Chapman.
That's the one, Tangy Chapman. That's probably what Lisa is underneath. That's the name.
Great. She should be in as a panelist now.
Thank you so much.
Hi, good morning. Sorry for that confusion there. Thank you all for the opportunity to speak here with you this morning. My name is Lisa Lurie. I'm the Executive Director with the Resource Conservation District of Santa Cruz County. And here together with Jim Robbins, who's been the technical lead for the development of the PWPs for both Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties. We're here to provide just an applicant's perspective on the PWPs and be available to answer any questions. Next slide. Let's see. So as commission staff really articulated well in the previous presentation, we are all very acutely aware of the increased threat of catastrophic wildfire across Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties and the broader Santa Cruz Mountain region, particularly in the wildland-urban interface. Our local topography and fuels make this region subject to periodic wildfires, but this increased threat of catastrophic levels of wildfires has resulted from a number of factors previously articulated, including population growth and development into the wildland-urban interface, long-term fire suppression, which has worked counter to historical fire regimes, as well as climate change, which have significantly altered the health of our forests and have led to uncharacteristically high fuel loads. Unfortunately, we've seen firsthand the impacts of these types of risks through the CZU August Lightning Complex fire, which we experienced last year. Because of this, there's a broad recognition of the need to increase the pace and scale of forest health and fuels management projects in both San Mateo and Santa Cruz counties. Next slide, please. So first, by way of introduction, resource conservation districts are special districts that are governed by local boards of directors and really driven by our mission to help communities to protect, conserve, and restore natural resources. Through technical assistance, education outreach, and regional coordination, we work to get critical conservation on the ground. RCDs in general, and the RCDs of San Mateo and Santa Cruz County in particular, are built on a solid foundation of collaboration. We work closely with private and public landowners and land managers, local scientists, resource agencies, and many others. And an example of this is our longstanding Integrated Watershed Restoration Program, or IWRP, which has been recognized both at the state and federal level as really a pioneering model for through which RCDs bring together resource agencies and funders early and often to identify conservation priorities and plan, permit, and implement projects that meet those priorities collaboratively and efficiently. Coastal Commission staff have been active partners in IWRP for nearly two decades. And in that time, through IWRP, we've collectively implemented over 180 restoration projects across San Mateo, Santa Cruz, and Monterey counties. And so that's really a good example and foundation that we take with us into the work that we do related to forest health and fire resiliency. Our two RCDs have really active forest health and fire resiliency programs where we provide technical assistance and outreach to improve the health of our forests and reduce the risk of wildfires. So the goals of these programs include reducing wildfire risk, increasing community wildfire resiliency, and improving overall forest health, which also benefits native habitats and improves watershed processes and restores ecosystems. This is all accomplished through partnership. And like all of our work, our forest health and fire resiliency projects are multi-objective, science-based, and site-specific. We engage experts such as local ecologists, state parks, local nonprofits, land trusts, as well as CAL FIRE and notably Coastal Commission staff throughout their development. Next slide, please. So throughout this work, both the RCDs as well as our broad suite of partners that I previously identified here at the local level, as well as partners at the state level, have identified the need to reduce barriers for implementing forest health and fuels management projects, particularly in the coastal zone, while at the same time protecting and enhancing coastal resources. Some of those barriers include funding, labor and equipment, as well as environmental compliance and permitting. So while a number of different agencies and partners are working at many different levels to address these problems, the RCDs of San Mateo and Santa Cruz, together with Coastal Commission staff and other partners, have worked to develop these public works plans as pilots for a local solution to meet the immediate need for compliance with the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. Commission staff have touched briefly on this development process and just want to reiterate that this work began really back in the fall of 2019. And I want to acknowledge and thank Coastal Commission staff for being engaged early, coming out into the field with the RCD and with our various technical partners, looking at specific sites for forest health and fuels management projects that were anticipated and being planned within the coastal zone to help us think through design considerations, as well as permit pathways for getting this work completed. Most recently, since October of last year, we've had a series of really focused meetings with Coastal Commission staff, as well as consultation with staff from state parks, CAL FIRE, and others to develop the public works plans to really look at how we could leverage the CAL VTP and develop these additional coastal vegetation treatment standards for the public works plans that are before you today. We've gone through the public noticing process at the county levels and have approved them within our respective boards of directors, bringing us to our conversation today. With that, I'd like to hand it over to Jim Robbins, if he still has speaker privileges on the next slide, to talk in a little bit more detail on the public works plans themselves.
Good morning, Chair Padilla and commissioners. I think I'll make this much briefer than expected due to the 3 minutes I have left. I want to just kind of talk a little bit about the program areas for the PWPs. You see these two maps, one of San Mateo County's coastal zone and one of Santa Cruz. In total, the program areas encompass about 83,000 acres in San Mateo and about 52,000 acres in Santa Cruz. And the important caveats to understand this are, one, that we're not saying that we're going to be conducting forest health and fire resilience projects across this entire landscape. The key is this is the landscape within which projects would be eligible to fit under the PWP. So I just want to be really clear, we're not proposing hundreds of thousands of acres of work. The other critical thing to say is that this work is all within county LCP areas and not within the city LCPs. We worked extensively with the counties, and because of fire risk and vegetation, we really focused on the county LCP areas. Next slide, please. We've already talked, Daniel and Lauren talked a lot about how the CAL VTP programmatic EIR has tremendous standards and mitigation measures, how we develop the coastal vegetation standards to sort of sit on top of those in order to provide additional protections and processes for protecting ESHA in the coastal zone. And this graphic just sort of shows how we collectively built the PWP, and I'll move quickly through this. Next slide. I don't think I need to talk about this very much. This is, again, the Coastal Vegetation Standards. Staff already described the collaborative process in which these were developed. So let's just go to the next slide with the last minute. Next slide. I'll keep moving. Again, these are the types of activities that are approved both under the CalVTP and the PWP. Daniel touched on this. Let me try to take the last minute. Next slide. Lisa, should I just jump to Camp Butte now? All right, next slide, please. So Daniel also touched on the Camp Butte No Creek project. I just want to really highlight the urgency related to this project. It's Girl Scouts of North America, one of their most popular camps. It's set in San Mateo County. And we really talked a lot about forest health. And this area, the forest, has got about 300 to 400 trees per acre. And it's dominated by these 1 to 12 inch diameter class trees. A healthier, dense forest based on literature, a redwood forest, would really have about 200 trees per acre. So you can kind of see the extensive density. The CZU fire burned through the majority of this area, leaving a significant amount of brush and trees that were either heavily damaged or killed, but not consumed, creating really elevated fire risk. The project timeline requires approval, hopefully at this meeting today, so that we can get... I assume that means I am done. I guess my final word was thank you very much for considering this. And luckily for all of us, staff did a fantastic job already touching on most of the topics we wanted to touch on. So thank you again. On behalf of the two RCTs, working with Coastal Commission staff has been really a valuable experience for all of us. Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you. All right, staff, it's my understanding that CAL FIRE wanted to address the commission on behalf of the with respect to both PWPs independently. Who do we have on behalf of CAL FIRE?
Yes, we have Matthew Reichman. I promoted him to panelist, so he should be able to unmute himself now.
Yes, good morning. Can everyone hear me okay?
We can hear you. How much time might you need? I understand 6 to 10 minutes.
That's probably more than sufficient. I would be just probably capable of getting through in 4 to 5 as well.
All right, 5 minutes, please proceed.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate the opportunity to address the commission this morning. My name is Matthew Reichman. I'm the Deputy Director for Resource Management at CAL FIRE. I am interested in talking a little bit about the fire risk that we have in the coastal zone. I think we've heard a lot about that this morning. It's not something I need to reiterate, but I think it was, obviously pretty clearly demonstrated during the CZU lightning complex. We had a significant number of acres burned, somewhere in the 86,000 acre range. A significant number of those acres were within the coastal zone. I think that's important to point out. The impacts to Big Basin Redwood State Park, 95% of the park burned, killing old growth redwood stands that have been around for generations. Most of the park's building and infrastructures were destroyed as well. And so there is obviously a critical need for us to implement fuel hazard reduction projects within the coastal zone. The one of the things I do want to mention is that CAL FIRE staff were involved in this process early on. I will say that once fire season hit last year, our seat at the table was vacant quite a bit. And so we don't feel like we were heavily engaged in this process cradle to grave. And I think that's worth pointing out. We absolutely do not support the PWP process as a statewide solution. We feel that there are opportunities under the CalVTP, which would allow any agency who's capable of being lead under CEQA to step forward and develop mitigations that would be able to address any protective measures or mitigations that would need be in order to address concerns within the coastal zone. And so what I mean by that is coastal zone staff or the RCDs could take a lead role under the CalVTP, develop a project-specific analysis that included mitigation and protection measures that would address the concerns within the coastal zone. And so I think Mr. Robbins said it best when he talked about the PWP having or sitting on top of the CalVTP with extra mitigations to ensure compliance within the zone. That there is your redundancy. We see this as being an effort that's going to result in additional costs and delays in getting these critical projects on the ground. I understand that several folks may not want to see vegetation management within the coastal zone. I understand that. But we can either plan for the worst and hope for the best, or we can just hope for the best. And that's our discretion, and that's the commission's discretion as well. I would hope that the commission would acknowledge the fact that we have the VTP, that it's an existing tool in our toolbox for any state agency or agency capable of taking a lead role under CEQA to comply with CEQA and provide environmental protections. I know there are individuals and entities that oppose the VTP and are concerned about the potential to convert various habitats across the state, specifically chaparral. But I will say that there's language built into the VTP that provides protection for chaparral, as well as requires that we do not convert chaparral and reduce the function of chaparral habitat. So the potential to convert under the VTP doesn't currently exist. The last thing I would say is there is an opportunity for the commission to take authority under their existing authorities to take action with the potential to develop administrative solutions, potentially regulations that would look at the definition of woody material and potentially exclude fuel hazard reduction projects from that definition. We currently have that for timber harvest practices that occur under the forest practice rules. So this isn't precedent setting. This is something we currently have the authority under the rules to do. And so we would ask that you potentially take that option as a statewide solution, or look at some of the other options that some of the other agencies have done in order to facilitate fuel hazard reduction projects statewide. For instance, the Water Board's State Water Board's approach and how they have worked with the Cal VTP and ultimately to provide clearance under their basin plans and the Clean Water Act. So with that, that concludes my report. I will say that I look forward to working, and the department looks forward to working with commission staff in order to continue to provide or look for and seek out a resolution on a statewide basis in order to address this problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Reichman. Staff, do we have any additional government entities that want to address the commission on this?
Yes, we have Jessica Morse signed up for the Natural Resources Agency. She is now a panelist and should be able to unmute herself.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Chair Padilla and staff this morning. I'll take 5 minutes if that's possible. I'm Jessica Morse. I'm Deputy Secretary for Forests and Wildfire Resilience for the California Natural Resources Agency. I want to take a minute today to frame where this action fits within California's broader wildfire resilience efforts and our efforts to ensure that our communities and our ecologies can withstand the changing climate that we are facing and the hotter and more extreme fire regimes that we're up against. As Chief Reichman pointed out, we are seeing extreme fire danger in the coastal zone areas. And fuel reduction is part of a three-pronged approach California has to wildfire resilience that we are investing in every community. We do interventions across the landscape to restore those natural fire regimes to lessen the severity and the intensity of these fires. We're investing around communities, that strategic fuel breaks, to allow communities to evacuate in the case of a fire or hold fire lines to be able to slow the progress of high intensity fires. And then we have interventions within communities such as defensible space and home hardening to ensure that the worst case scenario, a fire comes through a community, that it's able to withstand that fire. And so we are really invested in both protecting ecologies and communities. And this action around the public works plan and getting us to a more efficient pace of fuel reduction and invasive species removal within critical habitats is a really key piece of both ensuring we're restoring those natural fire regimes on the land and then also ensuring that we have tools to efficiently and effectively build strategic fuel breaks so communities can evacuate and firefighters can get in during catastrophic and extreme fires. One of the challenges we have been having is the coastal development permits, as you all are aware, have been a significant hurdle to getting projects done. We just had an approval of $536 million in early action dollars, which included $12 million for the California Coastal Conservancy. They approved fuel reduction and ecological restoration projects for coastal areas only one of which was in the coastal zone, and because the requirement was to have all of their projects already permitted. So we want to ensure that there's a faster approach. We really applaud the Coastal Commission staff for working with us and with CAL FIRE in developing the CAL VTP. They were partners in ensuring that there were coastal standards integrated into it. We applaud the RCDs for this innovative approach for the public works plan and encourage the Coastal Commission to approve these coastal work plans today so we can get projects going during this fire season, which is really critical. We also want to put on your radar a potentially faster approach, which Chief Fleischman was referring to, that going forward, we would encourage the Coastal Commission to work with us in having an even more streamlined approach to permitting in this area. The CAL VTP was developed in conjunction with environmental groups and through years of public comment with groups like the Nature Conservancy, Pacific Forest Trust, and the California Native Plant Society. The standards are deeply integrated to ensure that environmental protections are in place. And the CAL VTP gets CEQA analysis in and gets a CEQA approval. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife integrated all of their permitting standards into the CAL VTP mitigations so that a CAL VTP project cannot actually have a footprint that is heavy enough to trigger a fish and wildlife permit. The California Water Boards is the model we would encourage the Coastal Commission to follow going forward. The California Water Boards worked with the Board of Forestry and CAL FIRE to establish a statewide permit for which it is automatic enrollment into the CAL VTP. Because the Water Boards had integrated all of their standards into the VTP, just like staff have done, they are now automatically enrolled into the statewide permit through the CAL VTP. We also found funding for Water Board staff to be able to do this oversight so that they didn't need to charge an additional fee. So now currently the CAL VTP is essentially a one-stop application for CEQA, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and State Water Board's permits with all of those environmental protections in place. We can do something similar with the California Coastal Commission because the VTP requires project-specific analysis. So you have to do a site-on-the-ground study. Coastal Commission staff could be the lead agency, and therefore they would have all of their expert oversight on those project-specific analysis, which gets to the site-specific requirements that are needed. So we think there's a way to efficiently achieve fast permitting and environmental protection. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary. Appreciate it. Staff, are there additional government entity representatives or speakers on this matter?
No, there are not, Mr. Chair.
All right, let's go to the public speakers. Have them identify themselves again for the record. Their time will be limited to 3 minutes.
Thank you. As a quick reminder for members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and will bring you into the meeting as a panelist when it is your turn. When we do so, your Zoom will reload and this may take a moment. So to speed up this process, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you will be moved back to attendee mode. First, we will have Dan Silver, followed by Pamela Hetherington, followed by Richard Halsey. Dan Silver, you are now in as a panelist. You may unmute yourself, turn on your video if you would like, and state your name for the record. My apologies, Mr. Silver. It looks like you're on the phone, so I will allow you to talk. You may need to unmute yourself on your end by pressing star six.
Hello, am I unmuted? Because I'm actually on the Zoom.
Oh, yes, we can hear you.
Thank you very much. Sorry that there appears to be no video. Honorable Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Dan Silver, Endangered Habitats League, Southern California Regional Conservation Group. We appreciate the time staff spent with us listening to our concerns. However, we're not there yet. First, the CAL FIRE VTP does not provide a good foundation for any planning effort. For example, the remote landscape level treatments of shrublands called for in the VTP will not protect communities from wind-driven fires, which are the cause of loss of life and property. However, an overlay of the coastal vegetation treatment standards could help fix the problems. However, the proposed standards need substantial improvement. They are unacceptably open-ended in regard to shrublands. They do not clearly differentiate between shrublands, chaparral and coastal sage scrub, and conifer forests, where fire management vastly differs. For example, the coastal VTS could inappropriately apply age class mosaics to shrublands. The standards do not provide sufficient safeguards to prevent acceleration of the ongoing and dangerous conversion of shrublands to flammable weeds, which is occurring due to frequent human fire starts. The fact is that shrublands are burning too often as is and generally cannot tolerate more disturbance. We recommend a clear separation of the coastal VTS into forests and shrublands. At a minimum, however, the VTS needs supplemental work for shrublands. This should clearly identify in advance the narrow yet important circumstances where treatments within shrublands are justified. You owe this to the stakeholders and the public, and we have detailed these circumstances in written comments. In conclusion, initial outreach was unfortunately insufficient, and the supplemental staff report does not address our concerns. Please take a pause and fix the coastal VTS. But if you choose to move forward, please direct supplemental work to make improvements, which are imperative for shrublands, coastal sage scrub, and chaparral. EHL would be more than pleased to work with your excellent staff on such improvements. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Pamela Hetherington. It is now your turn to speak. Please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Good morning, Chair Padilla and commissioners. I am Pam Hetherington from the Environmental Center of San Diego. Can we afford to favor activities that may work to prevent climate change, but also endanger habitat and the wildlife dependent on that habitat? What we do to the environment, we do to ourselves. We know for certain biodiversity is a necessary ingredient in the formula for life on planet Earth. Decisions that impact the biodiversity of an area need to be grounded in science, conferred with stakeholders that work in habitat conservation and native flora and fauna. We agree with the California Chaparral Institute, EHL, Sequoia Forest Keepers, Friends of Harbors, Beaches and Parks, Sierra Club, and greatly respect the staff's work on these items. But there are flaws in the reports that may have impacted the decision-making process. These errors, scientifically unsound statements concerning fire ecology and wildfire safety need to be deconstructed and re-examined. Mischaracterization of the coastal zone habitats is most concerning. As sea level rise continues its path eastward, coastal zone habitats are already under threat. You must articulate and protect what is on the ground now. Once a brontosaurus enters the picture, it's too late. Everything in its path will be destroyed. The fact that the PWP never mentions sensitive, threatened, or endangered species outside of herbicide use needs attention. The proposed thinning, clearing, and clear-cutting activities will destroy habitat without addressing the problem scientifically or realistic in today's world. If you must approve this today, please do so in a 5-year increment so that it can be truth tested as to what they've promised and what is actually happening on the ground. Thank you kindly for your attention.
Thank you. Next, we have Richard Halsey, followed by Jorge DiCecco, followed by Karen Maki. I am having trouble finding all three of these speakers. So if you could please raise your hand by pressing the button on Zoom or dialing *9 if you're on the phone. Oh, I see one person raise their hand. I'll promote them to panelists now. All right. I promoted SMC Dems chair. If you are one of the three speakers I just named, please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Karen Mackey. I'm the chair of the Forest Protection Committee of the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club. This chapter covers about 20,000 members and supporters in San Mateo, Santa Clara, and San Benito counties. We urge you to deny certifying or at least delay certifying the San Mateo County TH-16A Health and Fire Resilience Public Work Plan until there can be further study, at least delay till that. This plan would likely lead to significant environmental harm to native habitat along San Mateo County's coast. San Mateo County's coast is comprised of grasses, farmland, coastal scrub, mixed Douglas fir and redwood conifer forests, and a half a dozen mostly small towns. Fuel reduction with its reliance on herbicides, masticators, bulldozers, and chainsaws will damage our beautiful wildlands and destroy biodiversity without reducing fire risk. California's coastal forests historically burn in large, high-density, infrequent wildfires. The 2020 CZU Lightning Complex was such a natural event, one of the infrequent severe fires that come to San Mateo County coast. No amount of native vegetation management would have altered the course of CZU Lightning Fire Complex. Dense impenetrable stands of chaparral and sagebrush is a natural condition for such for San Mateo County. Altering native scrublands by removing portions is highly destructive and may lead to conversion of shrubland to grasses. The TH-16A PWP is based on CAL FIRE's vegetation treatment program, which provides one fuel reduction program for all SRAs in California, whether they're in the Sierras, the North Coast, Southern California, or San Mateo County. One response does not fit all. California and the press have managed to convince the public that CAL FIRE and the press have managed to convince the public that that fuel reduction, is what's really needed to make us safe, from wildfire. But this is not a fitting response. The solution to reducing wildfire risk is in human communities is to make structures less flammable and to reduce vegetation around the house. That's like 100 feet around the house. And unfortunately, the CAL FIRE budget, the budget for the state of California puts like 5% for making homes safer. The rest is for fuel reduction. We also need to do more to address climate change much quicker, which is what is causing all these wildfires.
Thank you. Next is John Anderson, followed by Brett Hall, followed by Jennifer Normoyle. John Anderson, I'm having trouble finding you. Please raise your hand on Zoom or dial *9 if you're on the phone. In the meantime, we will move on to Brett Hall. Mr. Hall, I'm having trouble promoting you to a panelist, but I will try allowing you to talk now.
How's that?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. My connection is going through a satellite, so there's a bit of a delay, sort of like Star Trek or something. But I just had a couple of really very brief comments. First of all, my name is Brett Hall, and I am the director of the California Native Plant Program at UC Santa Cruz Arboretum. And we right now are involved in doing a mapping of the Santa Cruz County areas, Santa Cruz Mountains. A lot of those areas are within the Coastal Commission. And I think that it's pretty imperative that before any effort to do major fuel reduction is finished, that you consult with the data that shows where all the rare natural communities are. Maritime chaparral reaches its peak in the Central Coast, and there are associations of chaparral that occur and just one, maybe two, three, four, five individual stands. They're very small in some cases. The fire return cycle for maritime chaparral is, you know, 50 to 200 years. And so if we start moving into a mastication or fire cycle that's too short, we could limit the recruitment of these really rare species. I agree with the last speaker that a lot of the areas around homes and urban areas can be much improved with the right kind of defensive space. But I think it's really seriously important that you examine the kind of vegetation and consider how rare it is, for sure, and get the data, get the maps, and be careful not to, annihilate it through mastication and so forth, because all those seeds have to get into the seed bank and be ready for the fire. If there's fire, like in Southern California, they've converted lots of chaparral into non-native grasslands. So both edges of the sword have to be considered, so to speak. Anyway, thank you very much. And let's do our best to save the rare vegetation along the coast.
Thank you. Next is Jennifer Normoyle. Dr. Normoyle, please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jennifer Normoyle. I'm a concerned citizen in San Mateo County. I'm also a member of the Forest Protection Committee, referred to by Karen Mackey previously. So thank you for the opportunity to give me a chance to speak on regarding TH-16A, my comments on TH-16A also are applicable to TH-19A, the Forest Health and Fire Resilience Public Work Plans. So I too am a skeptic with regard to the value of fuel reduction. Most of the fuel reduction myths have been propagated by biased for-profit researchers, but current independent research using field-based data and published in peer-reviewed journals like Ecological Applications really has demonstrated that fuel reduction does little to protect people and their property from wildfires, because it does nothing to combat the winds that drive fire behavior and result in fire embers traveling up to 2 miles. Wind has been the major factor for our most recent deadly destructive wildfires, such as the Camp and the Creek fires. These plans will likely lead to significant environmental harm to native habitats along the coast, including California sagebrush, maritime chaparral, and coastal forests. And they may make the situation worse by spreading flammable invasive weeds and destroying intact ecosystems. Because of climate change, California is more flammable, but the answer is not the clearing of natural environments. Large, mixed to high intensity and frequent wildfires, such as the CZU complex, are in fact a normal condition for coastal zones in question, and result in post-fire ecosystems that are rich and provide important habitat for certain species. We need to concentrate on making our communities less flammable through retrofitting our structures and creating 100-foot defensible spaces and ensuring evacuation routes. And we do need to do so much more to combat climate change that has created the hot, dry conditions we currently find ourselves living with. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Richard Halsey, followed by Kim Lamori, followed by Georgia Goldfarb. Mr. Halsey, it is now your turn to speak. Please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Hello, this is Rick Halsey. I'm with the California Chaparral Institute. And I just would like to start off with explaining what's at stake here. This is chaparral. It's the naturally dense native shrubland that is California's most characteristic ecosystem. Next. Chaparral here in green on the map, this is where it all is. And as you can see, there's extensive amounts in the coastal zone of Santa Cruz County and San Mateo. Next. Here's a picture of my son and a typical chaparral stand. Next. This is the same place after the 2007 Weech Creek fire. Next. So the important point to realize here is being dense, impenetrable, and prone to infrequent, large, high-intensity fires is the natural condition of chaparral. It has nothing to do with past fire suppression, environmental laws. This is just the way the system is. Next. So the problem we face in the system is too many fires means no chaparral. Next. Fires occurring less than 15 to 20 years apart leads to a whole bunch of horrible things. Next. Such as reduced biodiversity, watershed function reduction, weedy grasslands, increased fire risk. And this is a picture of a scene that has been hit by numbers of fires. And you see in the lower right-hand corner there what happens when you have too many fires in a place. You just get replaced by weeds. Next. So here's a map that's showing the areas that are outside their natural fire return intervals. The hot colors, which is the red and the yellows and the oranges, have more fire than the systems can tolerate ecologically. And you'll see Santa Mateo, Santa Cruz County is right in the ballpark there. This is from the US Forest Service, by the way. Next. So here's a chart of climate change. As you can see, Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties are predicted to be one of the areas where chaparral may still be able to survive. So it's essentially do the right thing management-wise in these areas. Next. Unfortunately, the response to the threat of wildfire promoted by both the governor, the legislature, and CAL FIRE is to clear, burn, log, and herbicide fragile native habitats. It's an approach contrary to the science. Next. The science is really clear. More than 100 feet around the homes is not rational. In fact, that issue is in the coastal VTS document that actually allows for 300 feet, which is what you see in this picture. Next. Where such habitat projects occur, this is likely the result, disturbed soil and spread of more flammable invasive weeds. This and next are the kind of destructive projects that are coordinated by both CAL FIRE and the US Forest Service. Next, actually we're done here, I believe. So both CAL FIRE and the reports claim that there are protections to prevent the loss of chaparral and sage scrub. Not true. What I really urge you to think about is being independent from CAL FIRE, not following the VTP, because it does not have environmentally sound protections that will protect our fragile environments. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Kim Lamori. Ms. Lamori, I'm having trouble finding you, so please raise your hand or dial *9 on the phone if you're joining us on phone. We will move on to Georgia Goldfarb. Dr. Goldfarb, you are now in as a panelist. You may unmute yourself and begin.
I'm sorry. I lost my document here. Excuse me. Thank you. pardon the delay. Good morning, commissioners. Please deny or delay and amend the approval of the San Mateo and Santa Cruz County Public Works Plan in these two agenda items. Both plans will seriously compromise environmentally sensitive habitats such as California sage scrub and maritime chaparral. Excuse me. Although staff has worked hard on these items, conclusions may be based on erroneous information regarding fire ecology and wildfire safety, possibly given to staff by other departments, such as CAL FIRE. Previous fire suppression effects are not relevant in the coastal zone, where the natural cycle of fire may be over 100 years, longer than the advent of fire suppression. The critical factor in reducing wildfire, pardon me, is significantly reducing, even eliminating, the causes of ignition. In this area, wildfires are overwhelmingly human-caused. Electrical wires, which should be undergrounded, vehicle sparking in fires, other mechanical means of sparking, such as outdoor welding or weed whacking, campfires, arson, smoking. Further, there is no evidence that clearance from a structure by whatever mechanism is protecting against wildfires fire four homes in these areas. The first 5 feet are, of course, the most critical in eliminating fire-prone things like chips and plants. With a second approximately 70 feet being second, trimming dead materials and periodic watering within this area has, however, been shown to reduce flammability of plants. House hardening measures are, on the other hand, absolutely critical, but there is no meaningful support for residents to implement these measures. Legal requirements and subsidies will be needed to reduce home ignitions. Another critical problem is invasive plants, particularly grasses, which also contribute to the spread of wildfire. All efforts, short of pesticides, should be taken to remove these without damage to native habitat. Removal may be required of invasives more than once per year to keep them from both crowding out native growth and later from distributing remaining seed. Wildland habitat is already being damaged by drought and climate change. Our state government should not be further contributing to its destruction, including through permitting measures identified in current plans. These measures, as currently crafted, would do just that in our chaparral and coastal sage scrub. Please deny or delay and reevaluate these items so that more appropriate and effective measures can be taken to protect our homes and wildland habitat.
Thank you. Next is Patricia Healy, followed by Kristen Sandel, followed by Susan Lesson. Ms. Healy, you are now in as a panelist. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm representing the Malibu Coalition for Slow Growth, and my name is Pat Healy. The commission must protect coastal wildlands and ESHA for their important habitat values as absorbers of greenhouse gases and for the important role in cooling the planet. These two public works programs will not do this. Please don't support these projects and postpone your decision until there's much more for you to know before you approve them. It is the commission's mandate to protect coastal zone, and it would be a mistake to hastily and unnecessarily allow the destruction of important ESHA and other valuable native habitat, which will happen under the mistaken guise of wildlife suppression. In a wildfire, it's the embers that cause the destruction. The CAL FIRE VTP with coastal modifications will not stop embers from forming. Embers travel for miles and get embedded into the structure, causing them to ignite. CAL FIRE's VTP program relies on outdated science. The commission has to become familiar with the latest science on wildfires and ESHA protection before you've approved these programs. The best way to protect structures and life is by making a structure fire resistant and clearing 100 foot of bush or brush around a structure, not by needle destroying habitat. The devil is in the details. Although these plans state its environmental sensitive measures will be carried out only if feasible, since CAL FIRE looks at ESHA as fuel, not as habitat, in need of protection, ESHA will be needlessly destroyed. And it is clear under this program, ESHA can be removed. So the language is much too broad. The individual projects being undertaken under these programs must be identified prior to giving them essentially what is a blanket approval. San Mateo's program doesn't even identify the number of acres being destroyed. Santa Cruz states 54,000 acres are involved, an enormous amount of wildland being destroyed in just one county. Although it's more work for the commission to best protect coastal habitat, every unidentified project should be a standalone public works program. Once the commission approves these two overly broad programs, unidentified projects have the right to go forward, and the commission has only the right to put in mitigation measures, which may not be adequate, and public comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Kristen Sandel, it is now your turn to speak. Please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Kristen Sandel. I'm a Santa Cruz County resident and a member of the Valley Women's Club Environmental Committee and the Sierra Club, but speaking only as an individual today. While I appreciate that individual projects contained within the PWP are subject to commission review and public comment, I am concerned that approval of projects may be based on criteria which are too broad. These 52,000 acres in Santa Cruz County contain many unique microclimates, each requiring a different approach. And I would ask that any project approved by the commission be mindful of the need to tailor vegetation management to its specific location, whether that is forest, chaparral, or coastal prairie, and further that the use of herbicides and fire accelerants be restricted or prohibited in all cases. I do have some questions as to which entities would be carrying out approved vegetation management projects. For instance, does the PWP scope for forest health include clearing and trimming operations conducted by utilities? I also have concerns as to the wider ecological impacts of any such vegetation management or removal projects. Fire mitigation and management efforts are critical, and I support them, but I would urge that we focus on hardening infrastructure, including utilities and human habitations. Also, we are not talking only about flora here. All vegetation removal operations disrupt valuable habitat for countless species of wildlife, some of which are already under threat. This area is tremendously rich in biodiversity, which we desperately need. And I ask the commission be extremely cautious in approving any project in this terrain. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Next is Susan Lesson, followed by Jason Wells. Ms. Lesson, you may unmute yourself and begin. Susan Lesson, it looks like you're in on both the Zoom platform and on phone. You're in as a panelist. You may need to unmute yourself on the phone by dialing *6.
Hello?
Hello?
We can hear you. Please begin. Oh, there's an echo.
Okay. My name is Susan Lesson. I'm a member of the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club, and I'm on the Forest Protection Committee. I urge you to deny certifying or at least delay certifying the San Mateo County TH-16A as well as the Santa Cruz County TH-19A Forest Health and Fire Resilience Public Work Plans. They would lead to significant environmental harm to native habitat along the San Mateo County coast. The counties are comprised of grasses, farmlands, coastal scrub, mixed Douglas fir, and redwood conifer forests, and a half a dozen mostly small towns. Fuel reduction with its reliance on herbicide, masticators, bulldozers, and chainsaws will damage our beautiful wildlands and destroy biodiversity without reducing fire risk. Dense, impenetrable strands of chaparral and sagebrush is the natural condition for such habitat. Altering native shrublands by removing portions is highly destructive and may lead to conversion of shrubland to grasses. The San Mateo County TH-16A and Santa Cruz County TH-19A Forest Health and Fire Resilience Public Work Plans are not a fitting response to the state's increased wildfire risk. The solution to reducing the fire risk to human communities is to make structures less flammable and to reduce vegetation around the vulnerable structures. In addition, the state and all counties must escalate their efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions that cause climate change and our fire risks through increased heat, reduced rain, and increased winds. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak on these two plans, which I think should be delayed in certification. Thank you.
Thank you. The final speaker on our list is Jason Wells. We would also like to try one more time to find the speakers we could not find before. So Jorge DiCecco, John Anderson, and Kim Lamori, if you are here, please raise your hand by pressing the button on the Zoom platform or dialing *9 on the phone. And in the meantime, Jason Wells, please begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jason Wells. I'm the president of the California Licensed Foresters Association, a nonprofit organization representing licensed foresters and promoting the responsible management of California's forest lands. I'm also a professional forester working in Sonoma County. I'm calling today to speak in support of San Mateo and Santa Cruz RCD's efforts to provide a reasonable pathway for vegetation management within the coastal zone in their district, but also to speak about the necessity for the commission to address non-commercial forestry practices as they apply to coastal development permits. I really would like to commend San Mateo and Santa Cruz RCDs for putting this together because the need for forest health and fuels management is immediate and necessary. However, not every RCD in the coastal zone is going to have the technical expertise or funding to be able to replicate San Mateo RCD's efforts. So there's a tremendous need to manage fuels and vegetation in the state. In Sonoma County, the Myers-Grade fire in 2020 started within the coastal zone and grew to over 2,300 acres. The fire was stopped within half a mile of one of the highest tree mortality zones affected by sudden oak death in California. Had that fire entered the stand, it's nearly guaranteed that the fuels would have carried the fire beyond the control of the limited firefighting resources that were available at that time. There are forest health issues that need to be treated along the coast, which degrade the aesthetic and ecological values that the coastal zone was intended to preserve. In addition to sudden oak death, the coastlines of Sonoma and Mendocino County are currently experiencing widespread mortality of bishop pine, caused in part by aging stands and accelerated by rampant pitch canker. In these same coastal areas, grand fir is dying due to balsam woolly adelgid. All of these factors contribute to excessive fuels buildup in the area, and they threaten the health of the forest. And none of these problems will be addressed using the exempt timber harvest plan process because the projects largely have no commercial value. There are currently no exemptions to the requirements for coastal zone development permits for preventative maintenance intended to improve forest health and resilience to climate change. This is a major impediment for grant implementation in public works, and maintaining the requirement makes no sense for projects that don't convert wildlands, but instead promote their growth and health. Exemptions at the state level are inconsistent. Timber harvest plan documents are currently exempt from coastal zone development permits, but no other THP equivalent document, Board of Forestry certified exemptions to the THP process, or beneficial non-commercial forest management plans receive that same exemption. Sonoma County's LCP exempts vegetation management on state parkland, but no other ownership, including other public lands. This is a statewide problem, and while I commend San Mateo and Santa Cruz RCD's work on this proposal, depending on individual RCDs to submit PWPs for their district is not a solution that will work for the state at large. The commission should work with CAL FIRE to determine a reasonable set of best management practices that must be completed for beneficial enforced fuels management in the coastal zone, allowing the work to occur throughout the state. Thank you.
Thank you. We were not able to find the remaining speakers, so this concludes public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We'll bring it back to the representatives from the district. Do they want to add any additional comment or rebuttal?
Hi, I registered as a speaker and didn't have an opportunity to speak. My name is Steve Otten.
Oh, my apologies, Mr. Otten. We thought that you were the applicant's representative, but you're a member of the
public. I was, but I'd like to share a public comment if that's okay.
All right, let's take his testimony. His time's limited to 3 minutes. Welcome.
Great, thank you very much. My name is Steve Otten. I'm a registered professional forester in the Santa Cruz Mountains and worked on the Camp Butte No Creek plan and also in the public works process. And just want to say thanks to staff, the chair and the board for the opportunity to speak with you today. And you know what, I want to give you a practitioner standpoint here of what happened is that you know, the CalVTP came out and we were like, wow, this is a great document. It is super robust. It's going to take hundreds of hours to prepare one of these documents with reconnaissance level surveys and all of the requirements that are in there. And literally that's what's happened. We've now authored three of these CalVTP documents and they take hundreds of hours to carry out. And they're super robust. But there's item number 8 in the CalVTP that says you have to get buy-off from Coastal Commission. And a lot of reasons why it ended up there, I understand. But us as practitioners at the local level are left with, well, what do? We have to do something. And we recognize that there are larger challenges at greater legislative regulatory levels that need to be handled. But this is something that we need to do now. It's no joke about what's happening out there and the treatments that need to occur. And the last part of what I would really say here is that the project that's in front of you in regards to Camp Butineau Creek has been thoroughly analyzed, and we've spent a lot of time out there putting it together. And there are a multitude of resource professionals in the Santa Cruz Mountains that have a very good understanding for how these systems operate, understanding CEQA, and they've implemented a ton of restoration projects. And, you know, this may sound funny, but, you know, you go to a dentist when your teeth hurt. You go to a doctor when you don't feel well. And I'm asking you, this commission, to trust your resource professionals, to trust Cal Fire, to trust all of us to implement this level of understanding that we've had in these ecosystems for decades and in implementing a lot of these restorative practices. So thanks for the opportunity to speak with you. And I'm always available for questions. And you know what I would also say? I'm also open for any of the commission members to come and see what we're doing out there, to take a greater level of understanding. And I know the commission has an opportunity to have done that. They've done it in Cambria in a previous meeting. And I don't think that anyone who are working on these projects would say no to coming out. Thanks for the opportunity. And thanks for everyone's hard work. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We'll bring it back to the district.
Hello. Yeah, this is Jim Robbins. Thanks again for letting me speak. In order to just be effective, I have 4 quick points. There may be a rebuttal is a good term, but there are more explanations of a couple things that came up in public comment. One is, heard a number of commenters talk about extensive 50, 80,000 acres of impact. I just want to be really clear again. The eligible project program areas are 53,000 acres and 82,000 acres, but that is not the extent. There'll be small projects littered throughout that range. We're not talking about thousands and thousands of acres. First of all, we don't have the labor and ability to even do that work. And so I just want to be really clear. We're talking about over a 10-year period, let's say, 2 to 5, 6 projects per year in that area. And the projects are likely going to range from about 10 acres to maybe 100 acres at most. So we're not talking about massive impacts. That's exactly what we've been working with the commission on. Point 2 is, I heard a lot about the fact that this work won't stop fires. I want to be really clear. The intention isn't to stop fire. The intention really is to reduce the intensity and severity of wildfires. And it's not just about communities. We heard a lot about 100-foot defensible space. This is really about effects on wildlife and our ecosystems as well. The ecosystems in our part of the Central Coast, there's a fair amount of research that the return interval of fires is significantly shorter than what you see in Southern California. And the wildlife and the vegetation is more adapted to lower intensity, more regular fire. And that's what we're trying to work toward. And the idea is, again, to reduce intensity and severity of fires. Third point, there was a couple comments about the fact that the PWP could be duplicative or create extra time. One of the things that we tried to do, as we discussed briefly, was have a pilot project along with the PWPs to kind of get a feel for the additional time and the additional effort. What we have found through the Butineau Creek Camp PSA process is that when we use the VTP, basically the the coastal vegetation treatment standards require us to really talk about goals, ecosystem values, and how we're thinking about the process. That ended up being about 2 to 3 extra pages of text in the PSA, very, very minimal for a PSA that these things range from 85 to 200 pages. And the time is an extra few weeks. The PSA process through the VTP is about a 5 to 7 month process. So we're the PWP is really adding a pretty small layer in terms of sort of extending the time of the process. The third thing I'll just say is there's been a lot of talk about research. We've worked extensively with local resource professionals, fire ecologists, et cetera. I think as Steve Auten just noted, our work is really focused on our local ecosystems, not Southern California. I guess I wouldn't speak to some of the ecosystems in Southern California. But, okay, I'm good. I just wanted to rebut those points. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. All right, we'll bring it back to staff for closing comments.
Yes, thank you, Chair Padilla. I'll start us off. First, I want to note and appreciate Ms. Morris's testimony on behalf of the Resources Agency today, and very much appreciate Resources Agency support for approval of the PWPs. We really do think these are intended to help streamline authorizations in the coastal zone, and that they're an important tool for Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties for some of the reasons that you heard articulated in the speakers. You also heard some other streamlining suggestions, including the CAL FIRE idea that projects should be exempted from Coastal Act permitting requirements and also LCP permitting requirements. We can understand that desire, and we've had these conversations with CAL FIRE and the Resources Agency, but staff is not supportive of that. There are simply important Coastal Act, coastal resource protection considerations in the coastal zone. We don't see the Cal VTP by itself accounting for that. We're also not aware of cases where the commission held up any CDPs for these type of projects, as was alluded to. And staff hasn't opposed these type of projects. All we've identified is that there are coastal permit requirements and there are, you know, resource provisions that adhere to those related to the Coastal Act and LCPs. And so here, with these PWPs, we tried to be proactive and address those issues. So we embarked on developing the coastal vegetation treatment standards that you've heard of today to address the issues. We found actually a lot of common ground, which I think surprised some of the people in the, you know, conversations, including honestly with CAL FIRE folks with which we were working at the time. I think the collaboration resulted in what we think today is a very important tool that can be a very important tool, not only here, but in other places in the state. It will facilitate projects that are Coastal Act and LCP consistent. And the legwork's been done ahead of time, which again, is a very important component of this. I would say the other thing on the flip side of that, for all of the, there were a lot of comments about the Cal VTP and its inadequacies that many commenters found. From our perspective, the Cal VTP and its EIR identify what we see as fairly robust set of requirements that will apply to these projects. And I think, you know, Mr. Auten just spoke to that. It's not only in terms of ground level BMPs and mitigation measures for projects themselves, but also in terms of initial project and area evaluation, data sharing, and ultimately monitoring and adaptive management. And so on top of that, as described, the CVTS standards, they provide this additional level of protection, which stay true to Coastal Act and LCP protection requirements. And remember, as was indicated by Mr. Nathan in the initial presentation, the majority of these projects are going to result in outright habitat enhancement as by project design, by PWP design. And I think that, you know, Dr. Garsky Garcia and Dr. John Engel are here to help answer any questions you have about that. Also, there were some observations about using this to roll it out into other parts of the state. I think it's true as a tool, it's a vehicle that's appropriate, but these are local projects that went through local processes with these two counties and these two RCDs. And the PWPs here are not a recitation of the Cal VTP. Rather, they recognize that local context, the characteristics of the areas involved, including the LCPs, and have developed programs that are tailored to that. We're committed to working just as hard in other counties and other locations up and down the state with other willing partners to do the same thing, and all of which are expected to be responsive to those local characteristics. And to some of the other comments about the project approvals, this would not be a blanket approval today under the PWP of projects within those project areas. Rather, projects are going to go through the project review cycle that recognizes Cal State or Cal VTP provisions, as well as the Coastal Act required protections through the NOIDs. And I think it was important what Mr. Robbins just indicated. There are obviously some very specific things that are required through the Cal VTP, also through the Coastal VTS, but it doesn't result in this huge additional layer of bureaucracy, for lack of a better term. We really strived hard to dovetail requirements in a way that would ensure that the requirements that are in the Coastal Act and then by extension in the LCPs could be resolved. Those issues could be resolved as you're going through the Cal VTP process. It's a thought process. And I think we really did end up in a good spot that we think these will help for fire prevention purposes, but will also actually protect these resources. And so with that, I'm gonna note that we have, in addition to Mr. Nathan and Dr. Garsky Garcia, who you heard from earlier, we also have folks from our statewide legal and ecologist teams here, including Madeline Cavallari, Shanna Gray, Aaron Chalmers with our legal team, and obviously Dr. John Engel. And at this point, all those folks are going to be available for comments. At this point, I'd like to pass it to Madeline Cavallari. She's our statewide planning manager who has a couple of additional thoughts.
Thank you, Dan. I just wanted to add one point, which is to highlight that we did just start working with Cal Fire on exploring ways to develop streamlined systems for permitting their projects in the coastal zone. So I just wanted to highlight, and we're committed to working closely with them. Approving the PWP today does not preclude any of our options along those lines. And with that, I will pass it to Dr. Garsky Garcia for some additional thoughts.
Thank you, Madeline. Yes, I just want to take a few moments to acknowledge some of the comments, but first and foremost to acknowledge that we have heard and appreciate the concerns for the shared interests in these resources. All of us recognize how important these ecosystems are. And I would say that, you know, perhaps some of us began this process with a healthy bit of skepticism, but because we have had excellent working relationships with a number of our partners, including the resource conservation districts, in programs such as the Regional Conservation Investment Strategies and the Integrated Watershed Restoration Program. Those relationships are being built on a foundation of good trust and an ability to have earnest discussions, which really helped facilitate leading us, I think, all to a better place of understanding on the shared concerns and needs to address these issues. I want to also acknowledge that there were a number of commenters that suggested that this would lead to clearing or removal of ESHA or habitat conversion. But in fact, the Coastal VTS has really emphasized the point that where even within the Cal VTP, it's not talking about clearing, here in the coastal zone, we are even more protective about ESHA, and that it is our limits that are there, the sideboards that are there within the coastal treatment standards. Are intended to limit any kind of conversion of ESHA or removal of ESHA. And in fact, actually benefit ESHA whenever possible through things such as that hierarchy for removal of non-native vegetation and the diseased and dying vegetation. These are things that will actually benefit the local ecosystems. Let's see, I want to also iterate something that Mr. Robbins and Mr. Otten both spoke to, which is the PSA, the project specific analysis. That is an incredibly crucial part of this process and is built into the PWP. It's part of the Cal VTP. And as they were alluding to, the additional layer of the California or the Coastal VTS is really trying to help take what's already necessary and required under the Cal VTP and just provide us that extra layer of information for analysis at the coastal level so that we can look at that for Coastal Act consistency. And I can say that, you know, having gone through the Camp Butineau PSA, there is a heavy, heavy emphasis on looking at the technical literature and emphasizing what is appropriate for this geography and for these specific ecosystems at a local level.
there's a heavy draw on the science, and we respect and appreciate that, and that is exactly what we would be looking for when we move forward on these things. With that, I would also say that, you know, the California coast, as we all know, is highly variable, and conditions in Southern California are not necessarily going to be appropriate or reflective of what we see in Central or Northern California. And that is one of the reasons why, again, these PSAs are so important for being able to get into the details of what is specifically happening on the ground. What are the appropriate methods here? What is the appropriate target? What are the approaches that we are going to be using to address the specific problem at a given location? And that can't be emphasized enough. There is no one size fits all here. Another comment that was made was that, you know, the coastal vegetation treatment standards are too general. They're not prescriptive enough. They aren't specifying exactly where those limits are on everything. And that, again, goes back to a lot of that information we believe can be provided through that PSA process, at which point we are able to review it, taking all the specific considerations in for a site. The BTS itself is meant to kind of provide, these are the, you know, overarching pieces that we believe are still necessary on top of the BTP, but does not go so far as to say every redwood forest should look like X, Y, or Z. Every piece of chaparral should look like X, Y, or Z. The idea is that we're taking those microclimates, those specific conditions, whether that be disease, high levels of invasion, et cetera, into consideration at that PSA level. And that's really, really crucial. So I'm available for questions. I don't want to take up too much time or repeat what others have already said, but I hope that you will appreciate all of the hard work that has gone into this with us and our partners, and happy to respond to any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carl, does that conclude the staff's closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Chair Padilla. That does conclude our comments.
All right, to my colleagues, before we take it to the commission for questions or deliberation, do we want to take a quick stretch bio break, or do we want to soldier through? Looks like a break. All right, can we come back at 11:35? Will that suffice? All right, commission will stand in recess until 11:35. All right, I think we have a quorum. Let's reconvene the commission, and we will bring the item to the commission for questions and deliberation. Please raise your hand. If there are Commissioner Hart, followed by Commissioner Rice.
Thanks so much, Chair Padilla. I want to just start by saying that I'm really impressed with the collaboration here. First of all, the collaboration that went into 10 years of work on the CalVTP, that's not something that happened overnight. That's something that I think it showed a lot of foresight. The state recognized what was coming with climate change. They've already been dealing with fire. And obviously, all of the predictions of climate change have proven to be absolutely accurate, and things are just getting worse. Here in Sonoma County, 300,000 acres of the 1 million acres of our county have burned in the last, since 2017. I mean, think about it, a third of the county, and many lives lost. And just the impact on the habitat, on the coastal habitat, and on the inland habitat, it just can't be overestimated. And I think that was really driven home with the destruction that we saw in Big Basin. It was something that no one thought could happen. In our wildest imagination, we thought of the threats to Big Basin. And, you know, I did that general plan when I was on the State Parks Commission, and I've spent so much time there, and I bet we all have. Just an incredible place to see that. The destruction there was pretty just shocking and horrible. So it's so important that California has adopted the VTP. I've been the lead here in Sonoma County of the vegetation management program. Part of that has been working with Cal Fire to create a Cal VTP project. Well, a couple, but one in particular in the West County, sort of bordering out to the coastal zone. And it's just so important because when groups come forward, whether it's homeowners associations or nonprofit groups, or in this case, you know, we have the camp group come forward, it's very, very difficult and time consuming for them to approach CEQA on every single project. And the reality is we're going to see these fires burn through before the project ever can happen. And what we're talking about in terms of project, which everyone has said here today from the staff, is to create a healthy, more vibrant, more resilient forest to deal with invasives, to deal with the results of years and years of fire suppression and logging. So to me, this is a great thing that the state has done in creating this program. And an even better thing that we have done working with them on the veg treatment standards in the coastal zone. There are so many protections here. We are going to see, hopefully, through a combination of controlled burns, which are so critically important, grazing, and yes, of course, you know, there's going to be some treatment that's done, but the result is going to be more resilient, healthy forests and coastal ecosystems. So I just can't tell you how excited I am to see this come forward. And I think that it should be a model for other counties throughout the state. I'm strongly in favor.
Thank you, Commissioner Hart. Commissioner Rice.
Thank you. Really appreciate Commissioner Hart's comments globally, and then also just from the perspective of the role she plays as a resident and as a public working with the county, the Sonoma County, in her capacity as Director of Parks and now the Open Space District, the perspective that she has really, and having served on the State Parks Commission as well, really lends itself to so much and just absolutely zeroes in on where we are with this item on our agenda today, both speaking specifically to the two PWPs and to the project itself, but then more globally to this process. And I guess that's where what I have a couple questions. And I guess my first one is sort of global. Does staff envision that every county or every coastal community or RCD is going to be developing these PWPs or a PWP?
Not necessarily. As I indicated, it's an important tool, and we think it's something that could be adapted to different, you know, counties and communities should there be RCDs or other project proponents. We certainly could help make that happen. I think at a staff level, we see it as something that could be a model, but again, a model that's then, you know, made specific to that particular community. But it provides that framework, including the, you know, the CVTS standards, which I think are really important, which were the result of a lot of collaboration over a couple of years. But yes, I think generally speaking, yes.
And I think that's really important also that we that the commission offers itself as trying to enable the development and potentially also advocating for resources to help those local communities, counties, RCDs, because it doesn't have to be an RCD that develops a PWP, does it? Right?
This has to be, you know, under the Coastal Act, a public agency doing public works.
Okay.
It could be a county, a city, et cetera.
Yeah, I am sensitive to the capacity, different levels of capacity, resource, staff, financial and otherwise, of different communities up and down the coast. So I just think that that's important to recognize. I appreciate, and I do appreciate the intent, and I can see how the PWP and the process outlined it will help to streamline permitting for these vegetation treatment projects. And I think that that's something that maybe not everyone understands, is that while commercial timber operations, for instance, I don't believe have to get a CDP, correct? Are they exempt? Right.
They're exempt with a timber harvest plan, yes.
Yeah, unfortunately. But vegetation treatment projects do, and regardless of having a PWP. So I just want to make what I'm concerned about, and it is globally how, for those communities that don't have a CWP, an approved PWP, how to help facilitate their projects being implemented, developed, and streamlined. And this speaks to CAL FIRE's comments, and also I think to Ms. Morris's comments about continuing, the commission continuing to work with the other agents to see if we can develop even additional ways to help facilitate projects that are compliant with Cal VTP, and then also our own, or the Coastal Act and or local LCP. And I think she was speaking more almost towards a consolidated permit type of concept, but I would just encourage staff to continue to be working with the agencies to do everything that we can to help while ensuring compliance and ensuring resource protection, also helping to facilitate and implement the immense amount of work that needs to happen in our coastal zone, in our many, many unhealthy forests at this point. I just would hate to see the commission be a barrier. I want us to see us be a facilitator. As it is, you know, we'd much rather see someone get in there and do a forest management project that really creates a healthier ecosystem than have it not be touched and then go up in flames in a much more intense fire than what otherwise happened should something ignite. I think I had a couple other questions. Do we have a sense, Dan, of sort of statewide through the coastal zone, the number of potential projects that might be coming forward in any one year, given the goals set by the state with regards to number of acres, quote, treated or projects treated? I'm also concerned about ACT Coastal Commission staff's capacity to process. Do we have any concerns there or any thoughts with regards to, as this work accelerates, can we throughput it?
I mean, a couple of things on that, and I'll pass to Ms. Cavallari, who probably has a better sense statewide. But just as a general rule, we are trying our best to try and facilitate both these kind of projects, but also this type of a tool in other communities. We're working with San Luis Obispo County right now, for example. So I just wanted to be clear that we're a willing partner with counties, RCDs, other sorts of entities, to try and develop these kind of tools. And I would say we are still engaged, with Resources Agency and CAL FIRE about other options that may be available. And that could include master permits. There could be other sorts of changes to allow CAL FIRE to do PWPs, for example. I think there's a lot of opportunity for collaboration there. And I just wanted to be clear, from our perspective, we want to do that. We're not so supportive of just exempting projects from the Coastal Act. We think that there's a way of melding the various requirements that don't allow or don't require this great, you know, level of bureaucracy. And I think we've achieved that here. I will ask Ms. Cavallari if she can explain, if she knows statewide, you know, the kind of projects we might see. But I would note the issue of staffing is a considerable issue with $500 million worth of projects, some of which will be in the coastal zone. We're pretty strapped, as you're well aware, at a staffing level as it is. And so that's something also that we're in conversations about with respect to, you know, future rollout of this. And I think, you know, Commissioner Gold could probably speak to some of that as well. But I'll pass to Ms. Cavallari for now.
Thanks, Mr. Carl. I don't have too much to add. We don't have a clear picture of how many projects. I think it would probably depend on future funding, but we are absolutely committed to working with the partners and especially excited to be working again in earnest with CAL FIRE to be understanding what their needs are. As you know, the commission responds to proposals for development. And so, you know, that was why it was so great working with the RCD on this PWP, because in that case, we had an applicant, we had a project proponent who had, you know, a request for us. And so we'll be working to refine that with our other partners over the coming years. Thanks.
Thank you. I really appreciate, Dan, I really appreciate that your response and Alan as well, in terms of the willingness to be cooperative, but also identifying potential resource constraints, and maybe our partners at the state and our great advocates here on the commission can help make sure that we have the funding necessary here at the commission to be able to stand up and do our part to make sure that we're upholding the mission of the Coastal Act, and but also have the resources to actually get the work done and be that full partner, because this is such important work, and it's important work not around the fire risk, around the health, around actually creating a healthier ecosystem. And then also, you know, we haven't talked as much about the climate and GHG role that having healthier forests has, but that's also critical as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Vice Chair Brownsey.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to associate myself with the comments by Commissioner Hart from her extraordinary perspective, as well as Commissioner Rice, who asked many of the questions that I had. So I really appreciate that and appreciate the answers. Like them, I am incredibly encouraged by the high level of coordination among the state partners and the local partners on this really important work for all of the reasons that the commissioners before me have stated. But I do want to kind of focus in on the resources question, because I do think, given the press of work that is going to be funneled to us, regardless of whether it comes through a PWP model or whether it comes in through specific projects or some kind of statewide mechanism. I wanted to ask Ms. Moore, the Deputy Secretary Moore, if she's still participating in the Zoom.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. Oh, terrific. Thank you, Deputy Secretary. What I wanted to ask was, do you think that there is a possibility the Coastal Commission for other high work categories like Caltrans and others, we actually engage in discussion and have an interdepartmental contract such that Coastal Commission is able to hire staff who specifically, you know, their job description and their expertise is specific to processing those projects, that kind of work. And I think that the idea there is it really can accelerate internally the capacity of these projects coming in from the different districts, because we have someone working in our statewide office or wherever. Would resources be able to participate in a discussion of that and with CAL FIRE and other appropriate? Is that something you would be open to?
We're open to all sorts of innovative solutions here and really want to work with you and your staff to really solve this. I think the model that we can look towards is what the Water Boards has done. They retained their permitting authority, just created a statewide permit with automatic enrollment via the VTP. We found resources to staff them up to then have their oversight over the individual VTP permits that went forward. So they still retained all of their authority, all of their expertise to work with project proponents on the individual projects. And we found resources, fire budget, to be able to staff them, to be able to handle this increased capacity. And so I think that's a good model for the Coastal Commission to look towards, because project-specific analysis are required within the VTP. It would give Coastal Commission staff all of your sort of authority and expertise to be able to actually have oversight over the individual projects, just a much more streamlined application process and timeline for doing that.
Okay, thank you very much. That sounds encouraging. I think the resource, particularly the staffing up elements, I mean, I think the other technical elements would be something that Coastal Commission staff would certainly work out with through, you know, our executive director, and the technical staff would be working with the technical staffs from agency and the other departments. So that's very encouraging. And I just want to encourage our staff, as Commissioner Rice indicated, to pursue some of those options. I know you are, and are prioritizing that. So that's really good to hear. I think I just want to get a sense of timing, because it appears there are different kinds of perceptions of timing. So my sense from the CAL FIRE, Mr. Reichman, if you're still here on the Zoom, are you here, Ms.?
I don't think CAL FIRE's on anymore, but I'm happy to attempt to field any questions about it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Deputy Secretary Moore. I heard from them is they did not see the PWP as a viable model. I was trying to get a sense of what did they think is a timeline in terms of these VTPs with the coastal zone VTS S's as part of that. I mean, what are they thinking? They want all these things done in a year or two? Is that what they're thinking?
Or sooner. And just to clarify, you know, I think CAL FIRE would join me in saying that we do support the public works plans that are in front of the commission right now, because that gets us to a solution today to get these projects moving on the ground, and the wildfires are not going to wait for our processes. So we think this is a great path right now. The challenge is that going forward, you know, in speaking with CAL FIRE units on the ground, what they're concerned is that the time it takes to develop a public works plan for all of the counties within the coastal zone would be very onerous. And so we think a more expedited process is to instead have one statewide solution that tiers off of the VTP and creates a more streamlined approach, rather than relying on each county to come up with its own plan. And so, you know, the Cal VTP shortened the CEQA timeline from several years down to a few months. And those months are that really in-depth project-specific boots on the ground analysis, which upholds that really high standard for environmental review that's integrated here. And so we want to see, what we don't want to have happen is for the Cal VTP projects to go forward. They'll get their CEQA, they'll get their water boards, they'll have their CDFW permits all integrated into one, and then have to wait for a coastal development permit for 6 months or a year before starting that project, and have a few fire seasons go by with that area at higher risk. And so we really are needing to be flexible to be able to, and innovative, to be able to meet the realities of the risk that we are seeing on the ground. And we think these public works plans today will give you that in these two counties. And we want to encourage a more streamlined path forward for the rest of the state.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Secretary. That was helpful. Perhaps Dan or Madeline, if you could maybe provide perspective.
Yeah. A little perspective. We're still in conversations with Ms. Morse and, you know, Board of Forestry, CAL FIRE, about other sorts of solutions that could still, you know, respect the coastal authorization process, but that might not be PWPs. That's what I referred to. There may be, you know, master permits or tiered permits, all the things that were discussed. Those are all, you know, things that we need to think through so that we can ensure, again, the level of protection that's required under the Coastal Act and the LCPs, and some of the public participation requirements associated there too. So I think there's a lot of potential collaboration there. And like I said, we are willing partners in trying to help find a way that we can streamline these kind of projects that meet these criteria, I mean, akin to what these PWPs are. The PWP is just a tool. We think it's a good tool. It will work in these counties. We've also, you know, there was a bunch of work that went into these PWPs and the coastal VTS. So there's a lot of, you know, material that can be brought to another county or another RCD if they're interested in that. I don't think the timeline is as long as all that, including because staff is fully committed, including our statewide planning unit, to helping to facilitate this and working, you know, putting up a lot of upfront time, because we really do think that the upfront time is what saves us in the end. And we don't want to get to a position like Ms. Morris indicated, where projects are waiting on a coastal permit for a year. We just don't want to be there either. We want to get ahead of it. And so, yes, those are all kind of options that we're still talking about. And it may well be that that's the next thing you see from us, you know, on an agenda is a different option that we've been able to come up with that works for all parties. So I just want you to know that we're definitely engaged and we want to help solve the problem proactively. We don't want to be at the other end of this. Somebody's waiting on a coastal permit. So
right. I want to reiterate what Dan said earlier, too, that we're not aware of a single CDP for a project like this that hasn't been acted on or that wasn't streamlined or that didn't move forward quickly. That just hasn't happened. So we are absolutely partners in this process and moving it forward as quickly as possible. And we also see the urgency here and have been working very hard to make things streamlined. And we're not aware of a single instance where there's been a coastal issue that has held up a VTP.
I appreciate that. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, thank you, Council,
for jumping in there. I think that's an important point to have in the record. And Vice Chair, do you have additional questions?
Yeah, just a couple more things here. So with respect to that, then, Dan, what's your reaction in terms of timelines? I think Deputy Secretary Moore indicated that they really are looking at 1 to 2 years. Do you think that is a compatible timeline with what the commission is looking at?
Bracketing the staffing issues, which are very real that we talked about earlier, we obviously are going to prioritize these projects. I mean, as we always do, coastal staff is triaging every day, given the level of work that's in front of us. But these are important for the state. We understand that. So we'll be prioritizing that. I personally think that, you know, whether it's a PWP, master permit, some other permutation, we were able to work through these PWPs and this individual project with the RCDs and the counties in pretty short order. And that's developing PWPs from the ground up. You know, and I'd say that was a roughly 6 month process. And I'll defer to Madeline on the timing, 5 month, 4 month. At any rate, so I think that any other process that would try to emulate this would be shorter than that. And next one after that, shorter than that. So I do think that there's a lot of opportunity within the next couple of years to get out ahead of this, not only in these counties, but, you know, up and down the state. And I'll just reiterate, you know, we are looking towards other sorts of options that will respect the Coastal Act and LCP's requirements and public participation requirements, but that might be even more streamlined. So I think, again, a lot of work went into this that can be transferred, whether it's a PWP or it's an individual coastal permit project, or it's a different type of, you know, authorization that might be seeking different kind of streamlining. So I hope that helps.
And I would just add really quickly that the idea is that the commission's process would be occurring at the same time that the VTP is going on. So like Ms. Morris referenced the couple month of period to develop those, the idea is that commission staff would be engaged and involved from that time. And any tool we develop will be doing that so that we won't create any sort of delay.
Thank you so much. And staff, I really appreciate the perspective and the context that you just provided with respect to those questions. Deputy Secretary Morse, I apologize. I gave you a new name of Moore, and please forgive me for that. I think that I just want to say to wrap up, thank you, Mr. Chair, is that I think it's clear from the commission's statements and certainly the commission staff statement that there's no doubt about the urgency. There's no doubt about the severity of the threat from wildfire. I think that there's also, you know, and I know this is shared across agency as well, is that there's no doubt about the specificity, the vulnerability, and the importance of the coastal zone ecosystems, because they are among some of our most endangered ecosystems in the state. And I really feel like the coastal VTSs in conjunction with the VTPs is really an effective and comprehensive framework to work with. I'm so encouraged by the comments from our staff and from Deputy Secretary Morse with respect to the interagency agreement and the exploration and the collaboration that's going to occur going forward. And this is the type of activity really that our very lives depend on because of climate change and the very quality of life in our state for everybody. So I just want to commend all who are participating in that. And thank you so much. I'm deeply, deeply appreciative of all the hard work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Commissioner Groom.
Mr. Chair, could I make a motion?
We'll certainly come to you for that, Commissioner Groom. I know that Commissioner Gold wanted to be recognized.
Fine.
Thank you so much, Chair Padilla. And thank you to my fellow commissioners for asking some great questions and making points that are really strong. I too want to commend staff. I know Mr. Carl and Ms. Cavallari that this is one of the toughest issues that everybody works on. This is something that is so personal to so many people because of the loss of life, the loss of property, and frankly, the loss of ecological identity and heritage in so many different places along our coast. And so that degree of passion comes out in this discussion. And it's not easy. If it was an easy solution, this would have happened years ago. And so I understand that. My colleague, Deputy Secretary Morse, pulled me into this a few months ago, and I met with a number of staff, including the people here as well as Director Ainsworth, to talk about this issue. And the bottom line for, you know, which is different for me because, you know, obviously everybody else is sort of living and breathing. How do you figure out this solution? And has been working on it for quite some time. And I have the benefit of hearing, you know, updates from Deputy Secretary Morse on what's going on forest management and wildfire management every week at CNRA meetings. And in this particular case, I think it all boils down to time. And so this is a very unique situation where it hasn't been a lack of collaboration. There's been a ton of meetings, but because of the difficulty of solving this and because of different perspectives on the best way to get to the solution, the lack of progress from a statewide perspective has been an issue. I think the solutions that you have here today on the PWPs for Santa Cruz and San Mateo are great. I think they cover all the bases, you know, from the standpoint of protection of ecological resources and ESHA, being very sensitive to urgency and protecting property in that regard. So all of those things, I think this deals with. It's the scalability of the approach and the time frame needed that is really the concern. And so I put it to the commission to think about, not as part of the vote, because I think you know, support for the PWPs should really be a pretty simple decision for you. But I think from the standpoint of setting an expectation for staff on what time frame to really provide that sort of protection for the whole coast of California is what's needed. I think you've heard from Deputy Secretary Morse that she'd love to have this yesterday, you know, time machine 2 years ago, to be quite candid. You know, and obviously that's impossible. But from the standpoint of getting something done in the next year or two, honestly, 2 years, I just don't see this all being done in less than 2 years. But setting that sort of expectation makes sense. But at the same time, I think the commission has an opportunity, a unique opportunity, to say, this is the way we think it should be done. This is how much money and how many staff we need to get it done. And if we get those resources, we can get this done in 2 years. And so I just encourage my fellow commissioners to really, you know, to push for that. And because I agree with the existing resources, it's not possible. There's just no way the commission staff with the existing resources can get the whole coast of California done and be responsive to the VTP in that time frame. But by coming up with a discrete plan saying this is how we're going to do it and this is how we can actually get this done in 2 years, I think there's a good chance that the negotiations on how to move forward will be a lot more positive. Deputy Secretary Morse obviously has been encouraging the State Water Board Regional Board approach, because that's an innovative approach that they came up with. But, you know, whatever works for the commission, it doesn't mean you have to do it that way. Do it some other way. But the 2 years, you know, that's two more plus fire seasons. You know, now fire seasons are basically 300 out of 365 days anyways. You know, that's where the urgency comes from. And everybody knows that. But I think this is really a case where self-determination from the commission on how to do it can really result in progress occurring much more rapidly. Thanks.
Thanks very much. All right. Before we come back to Commissioner Groom, I'll just associate myself with the comments made by Commissioner Hart. Appreciate how clearly and succinctly she laid out what's before us and the importance therein, and has extra weight. Your opinion holds extra weight here particularly. And I'm happy to support the staff recommendations as well. And with that, I will go to Commissioner Groom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the commission certify Public Works Plan PWP 2 VTP 21-002-2 as submitted by the San Mateo County Resource Conservation District and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
All right, moved by Groom Bochco. You want to speak any further to the motion or second?
Oh, I'll just take a second because I certainly agree with what everyone else has said. But I want to, you know, get a hats off to the San Mateo County Conservation Resource District and our executive director. She is really usually on top of things and very innovative and very collaborative and loves to see things happen. And so I want to give her a lot of shout out for this for our county. This is the kind of thing we need to be doing. We need to be having the same set of tools, the same set of options, the same set of goals to make sure that our coast is protected. And so I think this is a big step forward.
Thank you. Commissioner Bochco?
Just very briefly, I concur with everything that's said by the prior commissioners, and including what Commissioner Groom just said about her local folks who work so hard on this. But I would also like us to pay special attention to what Commissioner Gold just said. You know, we are without a lot of resources, as we always have been. We've done a little better this year, we hope. This is a very special and a very difficult and a very widespread problem. So I would encourage us at whatever level we want to attack it to sit with Commissioner Gold and others and figure out an expedient way to do it so the commission retains authority over what we need authority over, but which allows for these protections that are so sorely needed by all. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Bochco. Ditto. All right, the mover and seconder have moved to certify the PWP with respect to San Mateo County as submitted. They're asking for a yes vote. Is there any further deliberation or discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner Bochco?
Yes.
Bochco, yes. Vice Chair Brownsy?
Aye.
Vice Chair Brownsy, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Groom?
Yes.
Groom, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Turnbull-Sanders?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Turnbull-Sanders, yes. Thank you. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Waranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amanzada?
Yes.
Amanzada, yes. Chair Padilla?
Aye.
Chair Padilla, yes. The vote's unanimous, sir.
Thank you. Commissioner Groom? Second motion, dealing with Camp Buchana.
I move the commission approve the proposed Camp Butano Public Works project contained in the San Mateo County Forest Health and Fire Resilience Public Work Plan as submitted and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
All right, moved. Groom Bochco, want to speak any further to the motion or second?
Only if you have not been to Butano and Camp, that area. It's one of the most beautiful places in San Mateo County, and this is a good thing to do.
All right, Commissioner Bochco. All right, any further deliberation or discussion? Mover and seconder asking for a yes vote. Please call the roll.
Vice Chair Brownsey?
Aye.
Vice Chair Brownsey, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Groom?
Yes.
Groom, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Turnbull Sanders?
Yes.
Turnbull Sanders, yes. Commissioner Waranga?
Aye.
Waranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amanzada?
Yes.
Amanzada, yes. Commissioner Bochco?
Yes.
Bochco, yes. Chair Padilla?
Aye.
Chair Padilla, yes. The vote's unanimous, sir.
Thank you. With that, the Camp Butano project is approved as submitted as well. Commissioner Groom, did you want to make the last motion on Santa Cruz? Because on page 9 and 10 of that item.
I move the commission certify the public works plan as submitted by Santa Cruz County Resource Conservation District and recommend a yes vote.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, moved by Groom Bochco. Any further comments to the motion or second? Seeing none, any further deliberation? Mover and seconder asking for a yes vote. Hearing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Groom?
Yes.
Groom, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Turnbull Sanders?
Yes.
Turnbull Sanders, yes. Commissioner Waranga?
Aye.
Waranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amanzada?
Yes.
Amanzada, yes. Commissioner Bochco?
Yes.
Bochco, yes. Vice Chair Brownsey?
Aye.
Vice Chair Brownsey, yes. Chair Padilla?
Aye.
Chair Padilla, yes. The vote's unanimous, sir.
And with that, the Santa Cruz PWP is certified as submitted. Thanks to everyone for your good work, and collaboration. I think that concludes the motions. Am I correct?
I think there's one more, Mr. Chair.
I do not think there is. That should conclude it, Commissioner Groom.
Okay.
We're good. Thank you all. I believe staff, I think that just leaves the Deputy Director's report for Central Coast District. Is that correct? Is there one?
Yes, Chair Padilla, that is correct. That's the last item for today, unless any statewide items were trailed from yesterday.
They were not.
I will jump into that item then. This is item number 17, the Central Coast District Director's report. Today we're reporting 3 waivers and 1 emergency coastal permit. I'll note that we did receive objection from 4 different parties on the PG&E project that's in Monterey, all of whom are residential property owners who back up on the PG&E easement where the project is located. Staff did reach out to all of those who objected and confirmed with 3 of them that any larger trees would only be removed if absolutely necessary and mutually agreed to by the property owner. With the other BMPs, these 3 indicated that they're generally okay with the project. The 4th objector never responded to our inquiries to walk through the issues. This project includes all the coastal vegetation treatment standards that we just discussed in the last item, and we continue to recommend that it be authorized. For the others, we're not aware of any objections or controversy. These waivers are de minimis waivers, so we're asking whether 4 or more commissioners object to any of these items in the DD's report. If not, then the commission will have concurred.
Thank you very much. Are there any, for the record, are there any speakers with respect to this deputy director's report?
There are two people available for questions, but nobody has signed up to speak.
Thank you. Are there any ex parte with respect to this report? Commissioner Hart?
Thank you, Chair Padilla. I was just wondering, Dan, if you could just spend just a couple minutes talking about the PG&E plan. I mean, I know that they're proposing remove a lot of trees, almost 168 or 100 trees. And I mean, I've just, sometimes PG&E can be a little rough on the landscape. What are the safeguards that you see for this project?
Yeah, again, this project came forward with a number of the BMPs, you know, emanating from the VTP, but also those coastal vegetation treatment standards that we discussed with PG&E, which they made part of their project description, which will be, you know, enforceable components of this project. A number of the trees are smaller saplings, so it's a big number, but they're not all, you know, large trees, like, for lack of a better term. Same kind of issue with the understory is pretty dense here. And so there's a big number, but we do think that they've designed it sensitively. And again, you know, we worked through this, you know, tried to apply, you know, kind of to the last discussion, tried to apply what we've learned from this PWP effort and its relationship to the VTP and these coastal vegetation treatment standards to this project as a coastal permit. And to PG&E's credit, they incorporated all of those things into their project description. So we feel confident that the project will be able to proceed with, and it's not going to lead to any sort of significant adverse impacts on the resources out there for similar sorts of reasons. So I don't know if that helps. That's where we came to with this one.
No, it sounds like you did a lot of due diligence, and it's not just a project where PG&E is just sort of going in on their own and doing, you know, what we've seen in other parts of the state, unfortunately. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner Hart. With that, are there any ex parte, just double checking on the Deputy Director's report, are there any objections? Hearing none, then those items are reported out. And if I'm not mistaken, that's a wrap for today. Great work, everyone. Some interesting issues. I hope you'll all be well over the balance of the month, and we will adjourn to the August hearing. Thanks. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Chair. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.